the Meltagun is like this, it's this constant stream of laser that burns. It like catches enemies on fire, but you could just hold the trigger down and just have this line, this constant line coming out of your gun.
Yeah.
But in Space Marine, it's a shotgun.
Hey guys, I'm recording.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to WTF at TFW, where we live in an era when Megan Fox saying she might watch Dark of the Moon makes the front page of major news outlets. With me today is Gog Dog.
Hey. Yeah, that's some news, isn't it?
Did you know? Are you going to follow her Twitter so that you start watching it when she starts watching it?
Nah, so it'll
be like you're watching it with her?
No.
Oh.
Not my thing.
Okay. Also with me today is Seth Buzzard.
Hey, Megan Fox gives Dark of the Moon two thumbs up.
Oh! Here it goes. I don't know what the f*** it means, but you guys know. She should record a riff tracks for Dark of the Moon and put it up on rifftracks.com.
Yeah. I'm sure she's hilarious and not accidental, like on purpose hilarious.
That's why I would like to see what would happen if she did it. Stumbling through this commentary track. Anyway, we are here to talk to you today about Transformers on this lovely September the 15th of 2011. And to open things up, I've got a nice warm-up topic, which is that the Transformers have been nominated for the National Toy Hall of Fame. They are among the 12 finalists, which also includes Star Wars, Jenga, Simon, and Dungeons and Dragons. So lots of Hasbro in there, because Hasbro owns Wizards of the Coast, who own Dungeons and Dragons, which is something I keep forgetting, even though it's been like that for a long time. Also in the running are the Dollhouse, the Pogo Stick, Puppets, Radio-Controlled Vehicles, and Mattel's Hot Wheels. Two will be selected for induction in November. So, that's kind of neat. I think it would be really cool if Transformers got in, but I am not sure if they can beat some of these other things, like Jenga. Gog, what do you think?
I'm more interested in knowing how the voting is going to take place, because if there's 40 finalists, or, well, I guess 12 finalists out of a, what was it, 12 finalists 46. Out of a group of 40?
46. Oh, no, sorry, 46 are in the Hall of Fame already. Never mind.
Oh, okay. Well, there's 12 finalists now. But I'm wondering like how the selection process is going to be, because if it was actually based on maybe random voting or whatever, it would be interesting to see how Transformers actually does rank against all these other staples of toydom.
It's mentioned like, at the bottom that it's based on criteria that includes icon status, longevity, and innovation.
Right, but I meant more of like who's going to be doing the voting.
Yeah. Yeah, the numerical side of it, like.
Yeah, but sounds like whoever puts on the Hall of Fame, they're going to use their own criteria to, that's okay, but that's kind of like professionals saying we're going to choose because we're professionals and we choose
professional but toy choosers.
Yeah, I'd kind of be more interested in just a random sampling of a large amount of people, or at the very least have. Of some sort of voting take place so that I could actually see, because it would be great for Transformers to go in this. I mean, do I think it will make it? I mean, well, can Transformers really beat crayons?
Like crayons, Silly Putty, and Mr. Potato Head and the Easy Bake Oven are all already in.
Oh, okay,
they're already in. So those are the examples of what has made it in.
Okay, so Dollhouse, Pogo Stick, Radio Control Vehicles, Hot Wheels, those. In the grand scheme of things, if you're not a hardcore Transformers fan, that might be hard to choose Transformers above some of those other things.
Like, out of this list, I'd easily say the Dollhouse and Jenga are more likely to make it in.
Yeah.
Just for their iconic status and longevity.
Right. But
haven't there been inductees in the past, like Hula Hoop and Stick? Wasn't a stick previously inducted?
I hope it was with a capital S.
Well, and then the picture, the official picture was a picture of a stick. So I think Dollhouse is going to get in for sure. But, I mean, so far it seems like a lot of things that have gotten inducted have been more kind of general concept things than franchise name brands.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think Star Wars is going to get in, at least not now. Like, maybe later.
Yeah, Star Wars, I was thinking about, I think it's because of the longevity of Star Wars being, like... Wasn't Star Wars what kind of kicked off the franchised action figure, in a way? Like, on a grand scale, way back in the 70s?
Well, like, definitely that size of figure.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
But it was the first, like, gigantic juggernaut movie marketing toy. I mean, they did... There was a bunch of movie tie-ins stuff for Planet of the Apes. There were toys and posters and lunchboxes and tons of Planet of the Apes stuff. But Star Wars kind of took it to a whole nother kind of level and has never stopped, or only taken little breaks here and there. But I mean, I would like Transformers to get in just so... We don't have to do that once a year thing of people getting really upset that they aren't.
Do people actually
and then complaining about what is?
Because I mean, yeah,
don't you remember the last?
No, I never paid attention to this last couple times.
Oh no! Oh yeah, people always get upset. Like, why are Transformers in there? But there's the hula hoop and the frisbee. It's like, well,
because those are iconic. That's why they're in there.
Yeah,
I mean, like when I look at this, you know, this is something that I think is a great test of one's own objectivity to look at that list and figure out where they think Transformers would lie. It definitely belongs in the top 12.
I hope I'm remembering right by saying that the stick is in there. I hope I'm remembering correctly. But like that, I would agree is kind of weird.
Maybe it's the stick with the wheel. You
can play with a stick, and there were times as a kid we did play with sticks, and we whack each other with them or whatever.
My school got us in trouble when we played with sticks because sticks were dangerous.
Oh, they were dirty too. Unclean.
But this Hall of Fame thing will be interesting to keep up with. Gog, what do you think has a higher chance out of these? Transformers or...
Let me see here for a second.
I don't think Dungeons & Dragons... is going to pull it up. That's not even really a toy.
Dollhouse. That's just the concept of a dollhouse, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's timeless compared to Transformers.
Right.
I mean,
that's why I think it's a shoe.
Yeah. I can't see that not making it, much like Seth said, it's like there's concepts here that have been around for decades or longer, maybe even hundreds of years in some cases. Puppets, I have a hard time believing that that those general concepts of the existence of this style of toy could Transformers as a brand could compete with that.
Yeah,
I mean, my own personal opinion, sure, but that's, I mean, if you look at without dollhouses, you wouldn't have action figure playsets, which, you know, you have stuff like that, including you've had those with Transformers, even now with the Ark. So, I mean, just trying to be objective, myself, I don't necessarily think myself that even Transformers could compete with that. I mean, maybe down the road if you want to get a little more specific, but
I think
it just seems a little strange to me that they're having general concepts compete with actual name brands.
I think this is kind of a sign that this has been going on for long enough, because I think it's almost like this is a great sign that, you know, Hasbro's Transformers, Star Wars action figures, and Hot Wheels are in the running for this, and in the final 12 running for this, when they're up against things with pedigree like Silly Putty. Like, I think this kind of is telling that, you know, now that these general concepts are all making their way into the Hall of Fame, we have the next tier down of concepts, which is more like the franchises that initialize concepts on a large mass media scale stepping in. But we're in the transitory stage where they're stepping in up against, you know, impossible battles like the dollhouse and the pogo stick or radio-controlled vehicles.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, Ball is also a past inductee.
Yeah.
And so yet eventually they're going to run out of those general concept ideas. They did ball, and ball included all balls, like any kind of ball you could think of. They're not going to come back later and do
all of the balls,
baseball, and then the following year, softball, and then the year after that, wiffle ball. No, they're done. They did ball. But yeah, I even think Hot Wheel gets in before Transformers.
But not for the fandoms, am I right?
Yeah. No, but yeah, if only two things are getting in, I'm putting my money on Dollhouse and Hot Wheel.
I'm still not sure about Hot Wheels compared to stuff like Puppets and Jenga, but we'll see in November, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know about Jenga because that's more of a game,
I guess.
You can't really do anything else with Jenga, really. Technically you could stack them up and make things out of them, but that's not what those blocks are for. Those blocks are for one specific thing, that game, where Dollhouse is this more general concept, and Hot Wheels are just this juggernaut thing.
I definitely think Dollhouse is in. Like, Dollhouse is, if Dollhouse doesn't get in, I'll be surprised.
Yeah, like, the only thing that competes with Hot Wheels is Matchbox.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, that predates Hot Wheels, doesn't it?
How do Hot Wheels...
Matchbox older?
I guess because Hot Wheels is such a juggernaut that it's like, that's where I think the concept is more like when they start introducing these franchise names, it's like, what is the franchise that single-handedly pushed a concept farther than it had been pushed before? Yeah.
And I think of Hot Wheels as more of a toy. Like, it just seems more toyish because Hot Wheels has all those goofy, like, fantasy vehicle designs where Matchbox sticks to real licensed vehicles.
Matchbox is real, man.
Yeah, and Hot Wheels is like, hey, check out this crazy ass hot rod thing with big bubble canopy and crazy ass wheels. And
that chased down the rubber tires version. One in every four cases.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think stuff like Transformers and whatnot will get in there eventually. Just not yet. And so there's going to be a few more years of, you know, hardcore fans getting hardcore mad when this happens once a year. And
I wish
Transformers are way better than a ball.
I wish I'd been paying attention.
Balls don't turn into anything.
When Silly Putty beat Transformers, so as I could go in and go like, "Yo, guys, Silly Putty is the first Transformer because it transforms from anything to anything."
Well, if we're gonna have Silly Putty, man, we need Play-Doh. Play-Doh.
We need Play-Doh so that. Greg Lombardo.
Yeah.
And get back in on this conversation.
Yeah, we need Play-Doh in there so that me, Dimooch, and Quinn Jester can all just have a super crazy millennium celebration party in celebration of Play-Doh.
Play-Doh shots.
Just like we did at BotCon 2011.
I really want to record a podcast with Greg Lombardo.
I think it would be great if the Kiss Dolls got nominated and inducted into the Toy Hall of Fame before the band got into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Like, the Toy Hall of Fame people should do that just to troll Kiss fans.
Gene Simmons would be up for it, I'm sure. But when we get
only
the results,
if there's money involved.
Yeah, when we get the results of this Toy Hall of Fame thing, we will definitely let everybody know whether or not Transformers won. I kind of don't think it will, but we'll see in November. Moving on from there, it is New Pick time. So going through the cavalcades of New Pick material we have this week, I would like to start off with Gog Dog.
So yeah, at the time I had picked my New Pick, I didn't realize that it actually made the front page because it somehow slipped my mind. But I learned about this before it reached the front page because I saw this on Proto Man's Twitter. Yeah, he found, I think it was him. I know that he was the one tweeting it saying, "Oh my god, oh my god, oh my god," and then the mass hysteria didn't really make it clear if he was the one that had taken the pic or showed it, but he, and, yeah, Hostess Hostess made some Transformers-themed snack cakes, or just, if you will, renamed existing ones and probably, I don't know, maybe slightly recolored them. But these are both hilarious for two different reasons. Shockwave. Has anyone even used that before? Like,
no.
It just seems so obvious that it's like, oh my god, it is amazing.
I want some shockwaves.
I want some shockwaves as well, and I would actually keep. I mean, I wouldn't keep the cakes because they're not gonna, you know, stay for very long. But
no.
The box, I would have to cut the front of that box out, I think, and save me some shockwave cardboard.
Shockwave.
Yeah, shockwave. Yeah, it says shockwave under it. It does actually say shockwave. So that's shockwave is good because it's legitimately awesome.
It's cupcakes.
Yeah.
The best part.
On the other hand, we have Snowballamus Prime.
Snowballamus Optimus Prime.
This is the most unfortunate Transformers naming example that we've had since Nexus Maximus.
Snowballamus.
Yeah, this is really, really, and I understand what they did. I mean, the existing snack cake. I mean, I don't eat these things, but I assume that they're just called snowballs, right? I believe I want a mouthful of
Snowballamus.
Yeah. Oh. Ooh.
And I like how there's no W either.
You're batting 500, Hostess.
Snowballamus Optimus Prime is something that I just really like saying. So I kind of want to get a couple boxes of these and take them to BotCon and then have a snowballing contest with some people.
Only if there was a snowball fight would I ever buy these, because it would not be to eat.
Why is it blue?
I'm not a fan of the Hostess snack cakes. Yeah, I just, the cream filling always bugged me.
It tastes like salt whenever I have it. Like, yeah, I just taste all the sodium.
But the snowballs are the worst because of the coconut factor.
Is that like coconut?
Isn't it?
I never had a snowball. I don't know. That's just that blue stuff, right? Like on the outside?
Yeah, usually they're like either pink or white.
I'm assuming that these got colored into some vague resemblance of prime colors.
Because in this picture, it's just fuzzy enough to look really gross. It looks like a pebble, or it looks like mold.
I was assuming that these somehow got recolored, but I don't know, because like Seth,
it's got a bloody center too.
Yeah,
that's not cool.
Give me your snack cake, and you can pretend like it's blood on the inside. It looks like the inside of the Fallen's like eye sockets after he gets his face ripped off.
So we getting some of these?
Yeah, shredded coconut.
Shredded coconut.
Yeah, and I'm not a fan.
I like coconut, but
I'm just not into Hostess.
Even still, yeah. This is the poster child of processed food. It just feels like you're eating something that was created by a machine. It's not even, I bet you
if you just bought a box of them and left them in a cupboard for like a year, when you opened it up, all the actual snack cakes would have evaporated by then.
Well, I'm looking at the Hostess website, and you might be surprised to know that Snowballs have also made celebrity appearances with supporting roles in episodes of The X-Files and Gilmore Girls, as well as the film The Mirror Has Two Faces.
Gilmore Girls? Well, hell, get me a case.
And Snowball is S-O-N, or S-N-O, balls.
Oh, so that's not a typo in Snowballamus. Snowballamus Optimus Prime. That's got to be a trivia question somewhere. Like, that's just such a mouthful of a name. Okay, mouthful of a...
It writes itself.
Oh, man. Things are... The tweet I got about these, I think it was Random Factor who said, like, now I have a fully official brand-labeled way of giving myself a horrendous stomach cancer rather than stuffing Slim Jims into ho-hos. I can just go get a box of Transformers branded Hostess cakes and hopefully stick Transformers branded Slim Jims into them.
I think I was chatting with Andy, Cobra Commander TFW, and he was saying that we should totally have these at BotCon next year and put the bacon wrapped Slim Jim into the Hostess and then inside of a snowball.
Oh god.
Nope. Nope.
That's for someone else to do, I think. I'm willing
to the website. According to the website, they sell 25 million snowballs each year.
25 million snowballs are sold or are eaten, do you think?
They just say sold.
Okay.
They make no claims that anybody actually
people
eats
just buy them and look at them. I don't think I want to do this.
Our snowball collectors. I got all the colors. I got all the colorways.
Colorways? oh god. That's not that would not have been as funny to me several months ago as it is now. that's all I'm gonna say. I'm really happy about these Hostess things existing, but I don't really want to eat them unless I can somehow profit from it. So look forward to Vangelis Tries, Hostess Snowballamuses, Optimus Primes's coming soon to YouTube.com. Seth, what's your new picture pick, and does it have to do with snack cakes?
No, it doesn't.
Oh, that's lovely.
Where did my picture pick go? I had a window open.
It fled when it saw the Snowballamus.
So we got pictures of the new version of Masterpiece Optimus Convoy Prime.
Hey.
.com. So we're actually getting a look at him. You know, I think he looks okay. I actually think he probably looks better than the original one. But I'm not going to pay ridiculous money to get him from Japan. I'll do the wait-and-see approach to see what happens with the U.S. release, which is sure to happen. I think it's pretty cool that he comes with a spike. I wouldn't be surprised if that gets left out of the American version, though, because it probably violates all kinds of choking hazards or something.
Well, if they make him out of spag and spag log, he'll be fine.
Yeah, but there was a post before of a Masterpiece Huffer question mark.
Mm-hmm.
And no, this isn't. But in the concept art for the Masterpiece Prime, that Huffer artwork is in there with it.
Yep.
So
that's what got the train rolling on that whole thing of, is Huffer a secret accessory? And apparently, I heard that there's another accessory that's meant to come with this that they haven't revealed yet, but now I don't know if that was just extra hearsay to make the Huffer hearsay make itself sound more enticing. I don't know.
I mean, it would be really cool if it did, and I might have to reconsider my stance of not paying a whole bunch of money for the Japanese version.
Well, I don't know
because
if this...
who knows? The American version's likely to not come with the trailer, you would think,
but
the price down.
The last American version of a thing that left a trailer out came with a little robot figure instead of a trailer, is all I'm saying.
Right. Right.
So
we'll see, but yeah, I mean, if you get Prime, you want the trailer with a roller, then you're going to want the spike. I wouldn't fault anybody for getting it.
There's plenty of good reasons to get it. Like, especially if you never got the original Masterpiece Prime, this is a much better looking toy to get. So,
yeah, and if you have that Hot Rod / Rodimus Prime, you need this one to shake hands with it.
Yes, and if you want to have an Optimus Prime look like a complete dork trying to use his gun with two hands, you can do that with this one. Look at that picture of him trying to hold his gun with two hands.
Yeah, totally sideways.
He doesn't know what he's doing. He's like, ah!
But, like, I like the picture of Prime and Rodimus shaking hands because they can never photograph Rodimus from the side because he looks so awful from a side view. So the way they're posed, it looks like a photo op picture where they're taking the picture for the camera. And it's just like...
I like how also they're even doing the thing where they're not looking at the camera, but they're also not looking at each other.
Yeah, they're looking kind of out.
They're looking at the other cameras that are around this one.
Yes. So.
I am still really kind of fence-sitting, because I'm not pre-ordering this, but I can see myself, if I ever had the money and the moment of weakness and the opportunity, picking this up sometime, but I'm not going to pre-order it anytime soon.
Yeah, and there's no doubt in my mind that this is going to come out in the United States at some point. I mean, as I've stated before, this is going to be the first masterpiece mold that I don't get the MP Japanese version of. I'm going to get the American version, but yeah, it just that figure is, it cannot justify that price. And again, that's me. I'm sure that it's a great figure, but it's not. I don't want another Prime for that much money right now.
Mm-hmm. And it is significantly smaller than the original.
Oh, yes. The vehicle mode, like, comparison pictures.
Well, there's a robot mode picture with the old and G1. And,
where's that picture? Is that in the...
It's
small in there. Okay, I see now.
Yeah.
Oh, good
It's
Lord.
Not a picture itself. It's in one of the larger montage pictures.
That is kind
of... Yeah, like the tips of his ear radar antennas don't even come up to the shoulders of MP01.
Man. I still have my
MP01. His gun folds up.
Yeah, the gun folds up. And I like that.
Stores in his back.
And the proportions of the of both modes look way better to me than the MP01s.
Yeah, the robot is a little more animation looking.
Yeah.
Like detailed, though. I mean, it's not like simplified cruddy animation, but it's not. I mean, it just kind of has better lines to it, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean,
the other one's kind of big and chunky, and the truck mode on MP01 was never that good.
No, I mean, this
truck mode looks much more cohesive.
This shows the amount of time between MP01 and MP10 for sure. Like, in case you didn't know how many years happened between them, just look at them next to each other, and it's kind of clear. Lots of years. That's the spoiler. But, this thing's coming out this month, isn't it? Later this month, apparently.
Yeah, just the whole price issue has made me kind of not pay too much attention.
I mostly mean, like, in terms of us getting better pictures of it once people actually get it.
Oh.
Like, that's less than a month away now. Although, isn't it funny how Masterpiece Rodimus was such a journey, and when we finally got there, it was like, oh man, I can't believe we made it this far. We've done it. We've gone from beginning to end of Masterpiece Rodimus. Masterpiece Convoy just kind of happened, and suddenly he's coming out. It's like, oh yeah, he's coming out.
Well, it didn't have the Proto-Man effect,
I guess, but he wasn't just Proto-Man, though. I mean, like, there were people trying to figure out how Rodimus transformed and stuff like that. And, I mean, granted, because we all know how Prime kind of works, there's less mystery to how this one transforms. But it's kind of funny that the journey of this one was so much more of a kind of thing that just happened over there. As compared to Rodimus. But we'll see in a couple weeks.
Well, I mean, Rodimus promised to do a lot of stuff that asked a lot of questions, because he was going to be Hot Rod and Rodimus Prime,
mm-hmm.
and have both vehicle and both robot modes. And that raises a lot more questions than this is another Optimus Prime that is a truck and a trailer.
I bet his legs turn into the part the trailer connects to. Yeah. His chest is probably the front of the truck. But we'll see. A couple weeks away. My own new pick is not from a couple weeks away. It's from years in the past. There's a featured eBay auction for Transformers vinyl records. And, some of these are the audiobooks with vinyl records, like Satellites of Doom and The Great Car Rally and Storms of Destruction. I had these on audio cassette, but I was in a transitory stage when you could have actually gotten these either on vinyl or audio cassette. And I had a Pac-Man audiobook that was on vinyl. And I always wonder why my Transformers ones weren't on vinyl. And, yeah, I don't know. If any of you out there are really into vinyl, just so you know, there's a way you can mix your passion for vinyl music with Transformers collecting. I really want to see also how the Great Car Rally is doing. It's in a lot with a She-Ra, Surprise in Whispering Woods book. $15 buy it now. $10 shipping international and nobody's going for it. Okay. It's actually pretty sane. About Satellites of Doom. Satellites of Doom, $50 buy it now and $20 shipping. It does not cost $20 to ship one of those books. Anyway. I thought that was neat because I had forgotten that there were vinyl records involved in all this until I saw this auction and it all came flooding back to me. So, would either of you guys want your Transformers audiobooks to be on vinyl or would you prefer audio cassette?
I actually had a record player when I was a kid.
Yeah, me too.
I was really young. I mean, I was like 3 or 4, I think, when I first got it. And I used to get, like, I don't know, kids' music records. you'd put it on the record player, then choose the speed, and it was neat. And, like, it just seems so foreign to me now of even using a record player like that. Much more so as something that you'd give a 4-year-old kid. Like, here's some records. Go have fun.
Like, you feel so fragile, right?
Like, and I have no idea, like, how... I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm not giving 4-year-olds enough credit, but maybe I'm not giving myself at that age enough credit, but it just seems so strange. But yeah,
4-year-old Gog Dog's like, hey, what's all this? Why do you think I'm stupid?
Yeah, I actually have I buy vinyls occasionally, but I don't have a turntable, so it's gonna be a while before I listen to them. But there's been a couple of like collector's edition albums that I've bought that came in a big box with both the CD and vinyl versions. And there's been a couple of limited release vinyls that I've bought over the years, but maybe I'll listen to them one day. I've always wanted one of those USB turntables, but I still have never really had the desire to pop down the money for them, but maybe that'll change someday soon.
Those are always, to me, the kind of things where they're not actually all that expensive, but they are just expensive enough to make me go, like, I'll buy that later.
Yeah, it's something that you'll buy and then use all of 4 times. And, I mean, who knows? Maybe if I had one, I'd probably not. I'd probably use it 4 times.
Start a vinyl record podcast.
Yeah, one day when I have nothing left to get, I could see myself picking up a USB turntable. But it's a while off. So to answer your question, I don't have the proper motivation to buy these currently, but who knows? Maybe if these go back up as a featured auction 10 years from now after I finally bought my USB turntable, perhaps.
USB 3, so it runs even faster. Anyway, that's vinyl records. It's also new Pick Picks. Next item on the agenda is that a whole bunch of G1 concept art and prototypes have been scanned from the newest Generations book, and there's lots of neat pictures, art by Masakatsu Saito-san. Lots of prototypes that I don't think we've seen before, surprisingly haven't seen before. Stuff like another G1 Unicron prototype, the wooden prototype for Fort Max, a wheelie prototype, etc. There's some really cool stuff in here. I honestly did not mean to pick something that also had Spream content, but A, I'm not complaining because now I picked something that has Spream content. So I got some delicious line art of my boy. And it's not bad at all. But there's another Action Master in there that's a little bit more surprising, and that is the tremendously short-legged Double Punch. No, I mean the Hot Rod and RC up there. The RC who has human butt going on. Like, scarily human butt going on. I don't know. I think it's all just really neat stuff, and I'm probably just going to pepper comments in as we go. But, Seth, what's something you want to pull out from here?
Well, it kind of looks like that RC is Silas artwork before Silas was ever around to do it.
Pre-Silas, but, Silas.
Yeah. Like, looking at these Unicron prototypes, there's still a lot about that Beast Wars Neo Unicron that I really like. That I really like more than the Unicron that actually came out But man, those other prototypes. I mean, the ones that are in the bottom of the pitcher we've seen. Like they even had them at BotCon. And I mean, those are kind of dopey looking. Like they're so round and goofy. But that wooden prototype that has when we were talking off mic, I guess you could say, before we started recording, you described as looking like a rolled up armadillo.
That description was handed to me over Twitter. Looking. I should mention that I forgot who linked it to me, but I got linked that picture with check it out, it's an armadillo. And I was like, okay. Oh.
Yeah, but man, that it looks awful.
It's got a busted horn.
It's very much for the best that these never came out. And kind of a shame that the Beast Ward Neo one didn't. But you know, you gotta, that's part of the process, I suppose, in developing these things.
Yeah, hashing them out. Gog, what about you? What's one you'd like to bring up?
Well, I'm curious, because if this Action Master RC had come out, would she have been the first female Transformer? Because the first female Transformer, and I guess that goes into the argument of, are Action Masters actually Transformers? But
and the argument of, are we counting Minerva or not?
Well, did Action Masters come out after Master Force?
I want to say they did.
Master Force was Power Master, so did Action Masters come after Power Master Prime?
Oh, yes. Action Masters came out. They were the last things to come out in the U.S.
Okay, then yeah. Then never mind. There goes that whole...
The first outwardly female Transformer.
The first originally intent female Transformer, then?
Yeah.
Nonetheless, nothing taken away from Minerva. Minerva's awesome. I think she's
Minerva,
cool.
Minerva don't got but, that rear end, man.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, well, not until that... Who's making it? The CM's Corp Minerva comes out, but
how does your own robot body ride up your butt? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Oh, yeah. It's still kind of funny though that they weren't going to give RC a try as fully transforming until they could get that sleek figure down. That, I don't know, who knows, maybe there's other concept art out there that I can't remember about of an actual transforming G1 RC. I'm not the human encyclopedia Proto-Man is.
Speaking of Proto-Man.
But yeah, like, the thing that caught my eye before were the, presumably the Autobot pretenders, because we see the Decepticon pretenders that were actually in the show, like, crap, man. Yeah, but what was his American name? Who's still on the pegs everywhere right now?
Skullgrin.
Skullgrin, yeah. What was his name? Doros.
I just remember that one of them was called Blood. That's really all.
Yeah, Blood was the bat, and then Doros was the Skullgrin.
Yeah.
In Master Force, but those guys had, animal counterparts on the Autobots. So instead of just having the regular pretenders like, you know, Lander and Metalhawk and them, you actually had straight up Eagle Man.
Eaglor!
Yeah, and Cat Dude and Fish Guy.
So, what do we call Fish Guy?
I don't remember.
The shark amphibian or something.
Frog shark.
The rock shark. The frog shark.
I can't choose. I'll choose both.
Yeah, we were saying before the show that it would be great if there was actually a Transformer called Frog Shark.
The most dangerous amphibian.
That's still funny.
Yeah, but that's really interesting. I don't know. Those look really, really kind of cool, and they're more heroic animal modes than the straight-up monster versions that the Decepticons had.
Did you see that down below, there were way more characterful robot modes for them as well.
Yeah,
like the Decepticon ones having characteristics from their shells, and the Autobot ones, the word Tron is right there on the arrow that's pointing at them. So apparently they were going to be somewhat Tron inspired. Kind of,
but it's interesting too, because it almost looks like two different versions. Because like you have the like Daros, he has like the huge head with the horns that go the entire length of his shoulders, mm-hmm. and then down below, I'm assuming that's because those are like slimmed down versions of the.
Yeah, those are the Transformer ones. And you can even see in the alt modes, they designed them so far as, like,
yeah.
they don't transform much, so all their heads are totally visible in their alt modes.
Yeah. But, it's a neat concept, and I think maybe they were wise to go with what they actually went with, of just straight-up regular robots inside, even though they were kind of lanky and different in aesthetic, but it's neat seeing the evolution of when they were trying to figure out what the pretenders were actually going to be. Like, yeah. are they going to be skinny versions of their shells inside and turn into?
I'm reading the katakana. The cat one in the middle is Lander. That was what Lander was going to look like.
Oh wow!
Lander's a cat man.
I can see it in his face. Like he's got sunglasses on than
Phoenix,
the other.
It's Phoenix, Lander, and Diver. That's who those three are.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because the other guys have visors, and he straight up has, it looks like, sunglasses.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And it's like, as they say, cats always lander on their feet.
Bum, bum, bum.
The name makes sense.
And I also forgot that the aquatic Decepticon one in Japan was called Gilmer.
Oh yeah, totally.
I like that name. Yo, we got something horrible. The septics are blocked up. Go get Gilmer. It's like, Gilmer's here.
So, now I wonder, because the Master Force versions were renamed from. I mean, at least I think we all assumed that, because the. Like when Master Force, they kind of took the toys and went in a different direction, but that was after they had already been released in America, right? So because take for instance Lander, like what was Lander's name in America?
I always forget.
I have it. I just can't remember his name. But whatever. But
it was not Lander. That's what it was.
Yeah, exactly. But they made him Lander, and they kind of did like their own take on him, like giving him sunglasses and a different color hair. Like the human that appeared on Master Force looked completely different than he actually looked like on the toy. Not that that's, you know, doesn't happen in Transformers. That happened quite a bit. But now seeing this in concept mode, I wonder if Lander was going to have his own unique toy, kind of like Metalhawk did, or did they just decide, like, we'll just use the ones that the Americans are using and kind of reappropriate them? So I'm kind of curious now to wonder if Lander and Diver and them were going to have their own unique toys, or if this was actually the concept and they turned into what was actually going to be. Like, if these were going to be separate than those.
Lander has Panthro nunchucks on his back. You can see one of the handles sticking off there, and the other one kind of behind his shoulder spike. I really like Lander even more now.
I like the human mode. Like, it looks more like Lander. So, but I don't know. I mean, we're just guessing now. It would probably help if I could read Japanese, but
yeah. I mean, I can read katakana. That's about it. So I saw names.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess that's my curiosity now. Is I wonder if these were meant to be separate from the American versions of the pretenders, or if these were actually prototypes and then were made, finalized into something more like the ones that we got, and then maybe they based Lander off of this concept sketch and then just used the existing toy. I don't know. Is anything I'm saying making sense?
No, I'm getting it.
Okay.
I was actually just trying to, while you were talking, trying to read some more katakana, but I couldn't catch anything else. I wanted to actually go to the one that you brought up off mic first, which was the Fortress Maximus design sketches, because these I am very sure are new, and it's not just design sketches; it's literally like the pencil sketch of how this will transform. A lot of different designs, including like three or four different head sculpts that look nothing like Fort Max. In very interesting ways. And then one of my favorite things ever about old-timey Transformers, which is the wooden prototype. The wooden prototype Fortress Maximus, and as you pointed out, with elbows! These wooden prototypes always freak me out, because they are, like, to me, way more finite than, like, a resin or a CAD prototype. And I always remember at that one BotCon when the Japanese dudes had a wooden prototype of one of the Raiden trains and then just put it in my hand. And I freaked out, because I was like, if I move, I'm going to break it. So I just waited till he took it back while I stared at it. But it's really cool.
I thought you freaked out because you thought the angry spirits of the dead tree were still inside.
This is after I got through my woodsman, wood people's phase. I don't believe in the voice of the bark anymore. At least when I do, I keep it, you know, on my own time, and I don't push it down other people's throats when I talk about it.
Yeah. I didn't know you were an atheist.
I'm not saying that. Not to start anything up here. Believe in the bark. I would love to get a wooden prototype of Fortress Maximus so I could put it in a case and never touch it, but that's probably not going to happen. What do you guys think of this Fort Max developmental stuff? It's kind of neat seeing the way that it went from paper to wood to plastic.
Yeah, some of those wood models look really cool. Like, almost kind of cooler than the actual toy. I don't have the picture open right now. I was looking at it earlier, but isn't one of them kind of reddish?
Yeah, that's, I think, one of the more finalized ones.
Yeah, that one looks cool. Like, those colors just work really well.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they're neat.
I just love also the idea that someone was, like, bashing the stuff together.
Yeah, and what's interesting about the, looking at some of those early concept sketches is those, maybe he wasn't always intended to be a headmaster?
No, not, especially not with some of those heads.
Yeah, exactly. So that's it almost seems like the headmaster part was maybe added as an afterthought.
Yeah,
which that's kind of interesting to me.
This makes me think that his design had been kicking around for a lot longer than maybe we thought it had. Like, this makes me think maybe he was designed before headmasters were a gimmick. But I'm sure that's all revealed in the copious Japanese text that I can only read bits and pieces of in a very useless way. Like, Fortress Maximus wa Japanese Yori robot city. Three type. Japanese. Metroplex. No, Metroflex. Concepto size. I give up. Hopefully someone translates these. Just in case a lot of my speculations and a lot of other people's speculations are actually answered in the text. But this Fort Max stuff is pretty dang cool. Seth, anything else from these pictures you'd like to cite?
Yeah, also in wood, this wheelie is really interesting.
Yeah.
It looked like he was going to be a whole different size class.
Way different toy.
Because, yeah, like, the vehicle mode is very similar in concept, but it's much longer. More of a stretched out version of what actually happened. And a lot of concepts of his robot mode are very similar, like where his face is and how, even though in this prototype there isn't that like canopy that flips up, you could see where it would be. And it's just, that there's more going on in the transformation, like the tips of where his hands are just sculpted on, and the final toy like kind of moved down out of the way to reveal actual tiny little hands.
Very tiny little hands.
But I mean, he still has skinny, super skinny legs and ultra narrow hips and big long arms. So,
and he,
in all those ways, it's, that's Wheelie, all right.
he's also, for a toy from like 86, he's actually kind of really poseable in the prototype form. He's got elbows and knees. And,
yeah, and it's interesting seeing how they had stuff like that in mind to put into toys, and apparently it just never made it past the design phase. But it's neat seeing, because you always, when you when you think of toys from that era, you mostly just think of like stiff arms, stiff legs. They stand up. They may have like a shoulder joint. And seeing this is, it's really interesting seeing like all these different points of articulation that were added in and then completely abandoned for something more brick-like. Yeah. So.
And I mean, like you said about his size, like just looking at that figure in the palm of the dude's hand, I'd say that he's definitely like, you know, hot rod sized in vehicle mode, which is
and
way bigger.
I wonder if it wasn't kind of a deal where they were thinking to make him this size originally, and then as the character was being developed and his role for the animation was kind of getting settled on, and he was going to be the Bumblebee replacement, that then the mindset of, well, Bumblebee was a mini-bot, so if this is replacing Bumblebee, he should be a mini-bot also. And then they scrapped all that and made the version that we got.
Hmm.
I wonder if that there's anything to that.
Again,
I wonder if that's spelled out in all the Japanese text that we can't read.
Exactly, I was going to say. what if it's stated right there? Even has your name written in it in Japanese somehow. Yeah. It's also just fun seeing this because the third-party Trans Space Formers wheelie based on the Jizai Toys design with copious diecast added in just got into some people's hands. And so we've had this sudden cavalcade of wheelie toy picture dumping, which I kind of find interesting and a little bit amusing. Gog, is there anything else in here that you wanted to bring up?
I'm clicking through them now. There's so many little things in here. A lot of it is just prototype sketches for toys that we already had seen, or concept sketches rather, but
yeah.
Of existing toys that we're all really familiar. Oh, yeah, the one that we were talking about before. The Pretender Optimus Prime with the clip-on lion head.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay, so we had this conversation, and Gog all of a sudden just goes like, what is this? And I'm like, what? So he links us, and it's, and I guess, like, I said, like, I actually have an Action Master like this, and they were only in Europe, but there's a line of Action Masters who came with little animal buddies that could turn into either a gun or clip onto their back as a backpack, and then the animal head would spring-load deploy over top of the robot head to, like, quote-unquote combine with them. And they apparently were thinking of doing Optimus Prime with a lion. So it would be Optimus Prime with a robot lion head. And
it's super interesting, too, because you have the Decepticons, like, and I'm zoomed in because it's kind of hard to see some of the smaller images at this resolution without it kind of looking fuzzy, but
yeah,
like Megatron is wearing like a, is that a saber-tooth bat? I don't know. I guess a vampire bat. It just with giant saber-tooth like vampire bat fangs, but
yeah,
like it's just really crazy just seeing like the G1 like
I think it's Jazz with the bull head.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure. And then like one of the fair ladies, Prowl
is wearing like a skull grin head, like a bullhorn or something.
And there's a Dinobot, I believe, wearing a falcon head, which is just weird because he's already a Dinobot. Like in the middle of the three Autobots. Yeah, it's Grimlock. It's I'm seeing the names now.
Yeah, and on that same picture we have
the one with the horns that we thought was a an Insecticon, that's Galvatron. That's an Action Master Galvatron. It says the name underneath him.
Oh, wow.
Like, I can see it now in his legs and stuff. That's really cool. I wish there was a Galvatron Action Master. That'd be the best.
And then just under that, we see concept art or line art for Star Saber. And, like, on one side of his head, he's got two antennae, and on the other side, he has one.
That's weird.
Yeah, that does look weird. Oh, I think the final version was way better.
Pointing at that Star Saber picture, it says Action Master something Star Saber. There's a kanji between Action Master and Star Saber opening up the paragraph that's pointing at that picture.
So, but Victory came after Action Masters, right?
Maybe this was going to be like between the all these different like Optimus Prime and Galvatron, all these G1 guys with head backpacks based on the European ones. between that and those are Action Master Sharktacons down there. It says Action Master. These were all Action Masters. It looks like they were designing Action Masters based on Death Zoris, Star Saber, Sharktacons.
Oh, God. Now, okay. Now I'm way more interested in these. Because I was like, okay, Star Saber and Death Zoris. Like, all right, that's fine.
All these descriptions have the word Action Master in katakana, and then this entire blue block they're part of says Action Master at the top in blue,
but
in
that's,
blue text.
That's so crazy. Like, when was this being thought of?
Yeah.
Like, because Action Masters had been...
These guys with the backpacks came out after Transformers ended in the U.S., so they were from the very era that brought about Scream.
Some of the Victory toys, like the MicroMasters, did come out in the U.S.
Yeah.
So that that makes sense. Wow, we missed out on Action Master Star Saber and Dezorus.
That one on the bottom right next to the Sharktacon is an actual Omega Supreme. He's got the claw hand, everything.
Oh, man. Can you imagine an Action Master Omega Supreme?
He has
face,
too. That's an Action Master Omega Supreme. Okay, this is my favorite
Supreme
page.
Supreme could have had a brother.
This is my favorite page in the whole book now.
Yeah, it is for
Good
me,
Lord.
Too, I think.
screw that. I was going to say, like, yo, check out over there. There's Lyo Kaiser's melee weapon he never had that sort of appeared in the show somewhat, but screw that. No,
yeah, but it's, I mean, okay, well...
These are way cooler.
That wasn't an Action Master Lyo Kaiser, though.
No,
right?
No.
Okay, I just want to make...
He's in a separate box.
Yeah, the blue is separated.
Yeah. And yeah, okay. As I read in Soul Fury's description, I believe it was like, these were the melee weapons that might have come with the Breast Masters, so they had more budget. And if you watch Victory, I recall Lyo Kaiser having this melee weapon blade on a stick thing, at least at some point in the show. I just assumed it was, you know, the same logic that brought about lots of the zone weapons or stuff like that, where it's like, yeah, it's melee weapons. But I'm really I wish that they had a bigger scan of the Sharktacon and the Supreme.
Yeah, actually, man, you imagine how awesome, even vintage wise now, it would be to build to troop build Action Master Sharktacon.
Yeah, you can even see like part of the shark mode on his back. Like, he's got it like a shell on his back.
Yeah.
You can see the eyes and everything.
A carapace.
That's so cool. Okay, okay, so the guys with the animal backpacks, here's the names I'm seeing. Meister. So Meister is actually the one on the left. So it's Meister, Grimlock, Prowl, Starscream, Megatron, Galvatron. Transformer Generation Deluxe. Partner Mask. Beast Wars? No, I can't have been... Okay, this is... We really need some... Like, we need to get Sidney Y on this ASAP. Because it says right there, something, Destron, something's... I think Destron Commander's Mask, Niwa, Beast Wars, no, and then a whole bunch of kanji I can't read. But it actually says Beast Wars there. I want to know a lot about this. There's no date written anywhere. Oh, and up there on the very top, Action Master Convoy, something EU, so that's European, Action Master Partners. So yeah, this is based on the European gimmick, I think. This lines up to me as being something designed just, as a reaction and extension of what Europe had already done.
Yeah, or maybe just waves that never saw the light of day.
Yeah. But these feel like these were designed to be like, we're going to take the European waves, debut with those, then do our own afterwards, maybe. Like how some of the post, like the Headmasters Master Force Victory series kind of had like this growing, shortening mixture of toys we had versus entirely new toys. Oh, man. Someone has to translate this stuff.
Yeah, all the Action Masters at the bottom, Star Saber down, they're blowing me away.
Oh,
that would have been so awesome.
Anyway, we should move on because I think we're running into the wall of not of the literally the language barrier here. most unfortunately, let's lighten things up a little bit with a voicemail. I got a voicemail from Tater X. He's not just a tater; he is like the Tater X, which I imagine is being like this potato slice with like a big crazy 90s tech helmet on its head and like Wolverine claws and stuff. I don't know. Anyway, I'm gonna get this voicemail going. from Tater X, sent in on May the 1st, 2011.
Hey, Seth. Hey, guys. It's Tater X from the message boards. I wanted to see if you guys, especially Seth, you're my favorite character on the show. I know you're not playing a character, but it's a show, so to me, you're a character. But I was wondering if you guys could give me your take on the righteous indignation in the fandom. The latest one I've noticed, the latest like thing that's got everyone upset is troop building over the Red Guards and the Scourges. And, you know, if it's not that, it's something else. And personally, I love it. I don't know. I'm a troll fan or something, but I really get off on people getting upset over stuff like this. And I just thought it'd be cool to listen to what you guys think about that. Thank you very much for the shows. We really appreciate it out here. And keep up the good work, guys. Later.
Yes! Okay, I love this question. He had a click on the end, and he called Seth his favorite character.
Seth, you're such a character.
Well, then he said afterwards that he realizes that I'm not a character.
I know, but still.
But then he said you're a character to him.
Well, that's okay.
I don't know. I see the train of thought, and I'm not making fun of it, but I think it's really funny. And also,
you're just jealous.
There's a guy I am, because he's all like, hey, what's up, Seth? Oh, and you other guys. Anyway, Seth, I got this question for you, and those other guys. You're my favorite character. Righteous indignation over army building. I am guessing a lot of the aggro he was reading at the time must have stemmed from Rekgar from Reveal the Shield, because that's the last time I remember people getting real riled
up. He specifically said Rekgar, too.
Oh, okay. Well, that answers that question. Yeah, I don't know. What do you guys feel about the folks who get really angry when they see, like, the picture of the guy who has 18 Rekgars and stuff like that?
Well, since this question was aimed at Seth, it's only fair if he goes first.
I suppose.
Well, that didn't stop Vangelis.
That's because I'm my favorite character. What? Anyway.
When it comes to that sort of stuff, amongst, like, on the message board, I'm not a fan because we're all supposed to be mods, too. And we're supposed to be above that sort of thing. And that stuff leads to trouble, and trouble leads to having to do moderator stuff. And that leads to people getting more upset. And so it bugs me when it happens on the boards, but I think it's hilarious when it happens anywhere else. I love watching people get upset about dumb, instant, unimportant things in any other aspect of life. And I'm a huge fan of it. Just sitting back and watching. Like, when I used to have to get up for work a lot earlier, like, I would stop off at, like, a Safeway or something on the way to work because it's open 24 hours, and now it's, like, 5 o'clock in the morning. There's maybe 2 other customers in the whole store. There's employees with not much else to do, so they're gossiping. And I would love walking past a couple Safeway employees who were just furious about something that had happened, or just talking total trash on another person, and I love that stuff. But when it happens on the boards, it's like, oh man, there's going to be work involved when this thread goes off the rails and we have to clean it up.
Gog, what about you? How do you feel about folks getting righteously indignified?
Sometimes it's tough because you understand that the points people are trying to make. And some are definitely more justified than others. Like, people, another one that people get super pissed about is scalpers. And you'll see scalpers on eBay that'll have a figure that's really hard to find, and they'll have 20 of them up for sale for buy it now for significant amounts above retail price. And yeah, I mean, I think it goes too far when you're actually getting angry to the point to where you're coming onto message boards or wherever and getting seriously angry about it to the point to where you can't carry on a normal conversation or see any other side of the argument. Certainly the whole scalping thing definitely gets on my nerves when people do that. And I mean, there's some scalpers out there that a lot of people know them and a lot of people see them. You see the same guys and they're there when the store opens, or they're there right after they know the the restocking schedules for the toy aisle, and they're there just an hour after they know that when they put toys out and which day, and they scoop everything up. And does that get on my nerves? Hell yeah. But, you know, in the end, it's all just toys. It should be a hobby. And yeah, I mean, you're going to get pissed, but it's, if you're getting to the point to where you're shouting and yelling and throwing things, then it's, no matter what it is, it's probably gone too far and you should probably take a step back. His example, the troop building, that bothers me much less because I know that, yeah, I mean, it sucks that everybody can't get one, and I would like to see everybody have the chance to get one, but it, in the end, those are still going to people or collectors who are getting them and putting them in their collection. It's not people that are scalping or scooping them up in order to try to sell and make a profit off of their fellow fan. So that doesn't really bother me. And like the whole thing was with Scourge, like people were getting super pissed because people were posting 15 different Scourges for their sweep army. You know what I see in nearly every single Walmart I walk into today? Multiple Scourges, like they're everywhere. And yeah, I mean, it might have taken a little while, but everybody at this point kind of has a really easy opportunity to own a Scourge. The Rekgar, much less. But to be fair, Rekgar himself isn't really a troop builder. So, and I guess maybe that makes it a little more frustrating for the people that were never able to get one. And so I can understand to a certain degree, like the whole Rekgar thing, because I never saw him at retail, and I bought him, I think, on ToysRUs.com, and it sold out minutes later. I've never seen him for sale again other than some super overpriced ones at BotCon. So I don't know. I can see the frustration. I can totally empathize, but if it gets to the point to where you're going on the boards and calling people out because they have some in their collection and you don't, then I don't know. Like I said, I see the definite difference between people who do that to try to make profit off of people and who are doing that for their own collection. And certainly for your example of the troop building, I don't have a problem with that at all. But more so if people are doing it to make money. But
I think it's
I
basically agree with you that it's, you know, there's a difference between someone who bought 20 of them to resell 20 of them or 19 of them, or someone who bought 20 of them because they just really love Junkions. And this is something I think I've talked about on the boards too. It's a very dangerous, slippery slope some people go down, where you see the guy who posts the picture of all the Rekgars he got, and sometimes there are people who even go like, hey, I found this rare figure, I bought 4 of them. And people will just, they will not only decide right on the spot that that person bought those for ill gains, but that they also bought them out of, from under the nose of children, that they push kids out of the way, and that they're posting the picture to brag and laugh at all those who don't have them. That's where I always really draw the line. Is it's one thing, you know, like you said, it's one thing to get annoyed when, you know, you can't get a toy and someone else found it. But what I hate is when people go on the witch hunts that happen sometimes, where they start stalking the boards. Anyone who shows an indication that they bought more than one of a toy, people will jump on and go like, what, are you some kind of scalper? You're gonna prove to me you're not a scalper? You know, like literally witch hunt style inquisitions of fellow fans. If you start doing that to people, you are just as bad as the scalpers, because you have become a similar negative force. You have become someone no one wants to hang out with, because you're that crazy guy who is always screaming about scalpers no matter what anyone else is trying to talk about. And that's where the righteous indignation thing, I totally agree with that word, because there are some folks who get too worked up about it and become just as bad as the thing they are trying to, quote unquote, take a stand against. They are not able to function without, you know, this knee jerk flip out at someone who has decided to buy more than one of a figure. Everyone has a reason to do
the phrase. The phrase hoarder used to get thrown around a lot more, but I think a lot of the newer waves of fans coming into the community maybe never caught on that phrase, or it's in some way been forgotten, and just anyone that buys multiples are scalpers, and where hoarder is also kind of an inflammatory, uncool thing to throw at somebody, but I mean, that's completely different than a scalper.
A lot of people use the word, I've seen it many times, a lot of people use the word scalper without really knowing what the word means. And that's
just anybody that buys a lot.
Yeah.
And I could see how it's frustrating. Like, there's been times where I've clicked on a thread, and there's the guy with a whole pile of the thing that I've never even seen in stores yet. But, I mean, he's also, like, in a different city or a different state. And it's like, well, he didn't buy all the ones that I haven't found. It's just there aren't any around here yet. And you find another way to get it. Or,
yeah,
like, you go online or you wait until it is the peg warmer and nobody wants it anymore.
Yeah, and you also, you make some really good friends by doing your own goodwill. Like, you know, I'm not trying to brag or anything, but, like, I have plenty of friends, and I try to at least keep track of if they're looking for something that's out. And, like, a good example is I've hooked Protoman up with some stuff. I've hooked him up with animated Rodimuses and Masterpiece Rodimuses and, like, weird bobblehead Protoman figures and all sorts of stuff. And it, you know, that comes back around because I couldn't find Solar Storm Grapple anywhere. He couldn't, never seen him at retail ever. And Protoman saw a Toys R Us with about 50 of them for on sale super cheap, and he hooked me up. So, you know, if you spread goodwill around to people and just try to help each other out, then it'll usually come back for you one day. And
yes, absolutely.
It's always good, and it's nothing about me, and it's nothing about Protoman. It's just become part of a group of people who, you know, even in sightings threads or wherever, just find someone and just be respectful and try to help each other out in an altruistic fashion, and
be a positive eventually force.
Eventually it will come back, and you know you'll get what you receive. And it's not a karma thing, it's just the laws of human nature.
It's how most humans act. When you act kind to a human, usually they will remember it. If they hang out with you a lot, they'll remember, hey, I remember when he did that thing for me, I'm gonna do this thing for him because I remember he's looking for this. Slight tangent, but there's one other thing stemming off of the willingness to drop Scalper. I really just want to drop a small bit of mess on, which is, I especially now that I know people have done it, one thing that really bugs me, someone goes to the San Diego Comic-Con, as an example. They pick up something that is $35 there. They then try to sell it for $50, and they get guys going like, you lousy, dirty, grease-drinking, pig-skin scalper! And it's like, that's the other thing that really bugs me, is, and that's why I think people don't really know what the word means, is sometimes people also would like to just make a small profit, and sometimes people's time is actually worth money. And that doesn't mean they're a scalper. It means that they are a human being who paid gas to go somewhere and spent 3 hours standing in a lineup.
Absolutely.
Especially at San Diego. At San Diego, if someone sells you something at cost at San Diego, that's not what they're obligated to do. That's what they did because they are a really damn good person. I would never expect, especially after this San Diego and hearing the stories from it, I would never expect someone to get a San Diego thing and then willingly sell it at cost for no profit. Because convention toys especially, those are not like a dude just grabbing a toy off a shelf at a gas station. You know, and I'm certainly not saying like, oh, you know, everyone should just mark up toys they buy. No, selling at cost is totally fine. Selling at cost is definitely a great, really broistic move to do. But especially when people just want to make, like, they want to make their $10 on the price tag back to pay for the car ride, you know? I probably wouldn't buy it right away unless I really wanted it, but I'm not going to flip out at them for a very realistic attempt to recomp some of their additional costs, unless, you know about a magic fuel-less car that nobody else knows about. And that's one that always gets me, that actually gets me almost more riled than the troop builders being called into scalpers. Because I'm like, guys, unless you've gone to a convention and have gone through a convention lineup, I don't want to hear you calling out someone for asking for some money on top.
And that's also like, and I mean, again, everyone has their own set of values. And I'm not saying that mine are better than everyone else's. But I certainly see a difference between convention exclusives. It's really expensive, just like you said, to go to a convention. If you super, super want a convention exclusive, number one, especially with BotCon, and most often with San Diego, although that can be harder, but there are ways, official ways, to get the convention exclusives if you're a non-attendee. But in the end, attendee exclusives are meant for the people who take the time and the effort to go there. If you really want the attendee exclusive at cost that bad, you should probably make the effort to go to the convention. Yeah. I mean, certainly I would like to make a little bit of profit off of my attendee exclusives. That's also because I waited in line for those things for hours, and I paid for a $450 plane ticket to fly across an entire continent to get it. So if I want to make a small amount of profit, sure. And I certainly see that as different than someone who goes to all the retail stores and tries to scoop it up so that no one can have it. But
yeah, and
that's my personal outlook. And if you think that makes me a bit of a hypocrite, then I totally understand, and you can politely tell me that. But
there's also, to me, there's a difference between, you know, someone selling one thing to make some profit and someone selling 15 things at a 300% markup to make a lot of profit. Like, and that's the thing that, again, when people just start throwing the word scalper around, people treat it like such a black and white term. And it's like, it's a loaded ass term in the online fandom. You don't just call someone a scalper. You got to assess the situation and do a little bit of critical thinking and figure out, is this scalping or is this selling for profit? Like, there is a difference.
Yeah, for me, a scalper is somebody that is trying to do it like as a money making scheme, like as kind of a business, where they're the dudes that are there at opening at a store because they know exactly what day and time stuff gets stocked, or if it's a 24-hour store, they're lingering down aisles waiting for somebody to bring the fresh cases out and then ripping the cases open when the employee turns their back. It's just so they can sell it online. Like, that's a scalper. Somebody can, you know, be scalping by selling something at a profit, but that's not necessarily bad. Like, for all the reasons that you pointed out with convention stuff. Like, with BotCon things, I've passed on some stuff to some people at cost, and I've passed on some stuff to some people at tiny little markups, and I've sold some stuff specifically trying to get as much money for it as I can for different reasons. But I'm not, you know, trying to make a living out of it. And I'm not taking stuff off of shelves that wouldn't have been available to somebody normally.
Yeah, like, and the thing
with
the convention,
if you're not going to the convention, then I haven't taken anything out of your hands.
Yeah, and the thing with the convention exclusives is whatever the attendees don't buy get immediately sold to the dealers. So it's either the actual people who are going on their own hard-earned nickel and dime can make a little bit of money off of it, or the online stores can sell it and make even more profit because they generally sell it for more. So I don't mind getting a set and selling it because it's probably going to go to someone for less than what, say, I'm not going to name any stores, but you know. Yeah. But the stores that will sell them after the fact, because they generally sell them for more than what I would sell them for. So to me, it's a win-win situation.
And then off in the distance, we get the one smart guy kind of going like, so what you're saying is capitalism happens. It's like, yep, that is what happens.
For better or for worse. And sometimes that's a good thing and sometimes it's a bad thing. Yeah.
At the end of the day, guess what? Capitalism just happened.
Yeah, if you don't agree with someone's selling tactic, then don't buy from them. And if no one buys from them, then they will be forced to change their method.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just such a thing to, you know, because I can remember when I was younger, that would kind of get me riled up. But at the end of the day, how many toys have been hard to find and then became not hard to find? That's also the other thing to remember.
And I don't like that scalper dude, the dude that's there going into cases as they're being brought out and making it so nobody else has any chance in that county because they're hitting every Target and Walmart and Kmart and Toys R Us and within 100 miles. Like, I don't like that dude. That dude's taking advantage and they're creating the situation that is going to make their sales. Mm-hmm. Like, they're making it so you can't get it anywhere else. And hopefully you'll come get it from him. Which that's bad news. Like, get it on Amazon or something else. And some of that stuff gets marked up too. But I also know there's nothing I could possibly post on a message board that is going to stop anybody from being that guy. like, maybe I could say something in a post or on here that will deter somebody from becoming that guy in the first place. But somebody that's already doing that, there's nothing any of us can say that's going to stop it.
But you can get really mad.
They are that guy. Yeah.
So anyway, hope that answered your voicemail. I think we're kind of just hammering home the point. Like, guess what? No one likes it. So deal with it.
Well, I think the only problem with how we answered that message was we talked way too much about scalpers and not enough about how awesome I am on the show.
You're my favorite character. On the show. You know what? You know who brings a lot to the show? Seth.
Yep.
The Seth Buzzard character, more specifically.
Oh, man. Characters who are people. I can get started about that, but I won't. Let's go into a written listener question that I've got here from The One Shall Stand with a number one in there, all one word, who sent this in on July 6th of 2011. Says, quote, first, I have to say that I love the show. It is very fun to listen to. Next, you may want time to think about these questions. One, do you ever sell any of your collection to make room for newer figures? Gog, one, do you ever sell any of your collection to make room for newer figures?
Not really. I mean, if it's generally... Okay, like my thing, and I'm sure it's probably been obvious to some people who listen, and maybe not, but otherwise, but it's... I tend to buy something, and oftentimes I'll like it, and sometimes I will continue to like it, and sometimes my opinion kind of sours, and I tend to, when I have something in hand, I'm like, oh, that's cool, you know, I like it, and I find a way to like it, and a lot of the times that doesn't last for a while, and I, like, a lot of the Movie One toys and stuff, like, I thought they were really neat at first, and then after a while, it's like, and maybe that is also because I think Transformers engineering has come a long way since then, but I don't really think that I sell things necessarily in order to make room for new stuff. I just sell it because I just don't like it anymore. Like, I think that's really about it. Sometimes your opinion of a figure doesn't have staying power. The figure itself doesn't really have staying power, and that's certainly subjective person to person, but that's really about the only time I get rid of things is if I just don't really like it anymore.
All right. Seth, what about you? Do you sell stuff to make room?
I think about selling stuff to make room, but then I never actually do, because then I start thinking, I'm not going to get anything for this crappy old Armada stuff. And I'm not going to make enough back to make it worth my time to put it on eBay or make a sales thread on the board and then go all the way to the post office to pack it up and ship it. So I just end up stuffing it in a box and then kind of go, oh man, that box is in the way. Gotta find somewhere else to put that box. I should, but I haven't.
I am very much of the I should category. In fact, one thing I really like about Piaw is his ability to just purge his shelf. If you ever see when he does a sale on Twitter, it's literally like, my shelf is too full, so I'm selling, like, everything, because he's got more stuff coming in. And I always think to myself, like, man, I wish I could do that, because I still have I haven't hit that plateau yet of, like, I'm going to ditch a whole lot of stuff. Especially because of some of the video stuff I do, I have this whole, it's really bad. I have this whole extra reason to hang on to things, because I also have the thing of, like, oh, but what if sometime down the road I need to reference this toy for a video? I would like to have it on hand so I can do that, or, you know, for the sake of comparison, which is one of the worst reasons to ever think of to keep stuff, so that you can keep it to show it next to stuff you're going to get later. Because that basically is, like, implying the worst case scenario of, I know I'm going to have more than what I have now, so I'm going to keep what I have now to put it next to what I'm going to potentially have.
Yeah, kind of, but it's also, you're doing that for referential purposes. So that's like saying, I'm going to write a wiki article, but I'm going to sell this toy before I get around to writing the article. So, I mean, yeah, there's some differences with that analogy, but it's you're doing it for referential purposes, and I don't know. I don't think it's the worst reason ever because you're for that. Yeah,
I am hyperbolizing it, but I think it's also just because I know that I am BSing myself a little bit when I say that. Of like, oh no, I'm gonna reference this later because I'm like, I know I'm not gonna reference all of this later. I just don't know what I'm gonna reference when I get around to referencing stuff. So, you know, if you can, you know, keep your collection kind of as a fluid object rather than a growing one, you know, that's all for the better. But personally, I don't, and I definitely have no ill will towards those who do. In fact, I think that you are cool people who do cool things. His question goes on to say, two if you do, how do you decide which ones to sell off? Okay, well, I don't, so I don't decide. I guess a better question to make this worthwhile would be, if, you know, when you do sell figures, how do you decide? Gog, you kind of answered that in a way by saying that, you know, if you're just not having fun with something anymore, you sell it.
And to go off of what Seth said too, like, a lot of the reason why this, even the stuff that I don't like and don't really want anymore, why do I still have it? Like, Seth hit the nail on the head there too, is a lot of that stuff no one wants anymore. When they've made, yeah. And not really Bumblebee, because I don't have really hard, I think I have like 3 movie Bumblebees or 4 or whatever, but, and they're all fairly different from one another, but like, why, you're going to have a hard time selling maybe movie 1 or movie 2 Bumblebee because they've made 5 molds since then, and I think the opinion is generally that they have tended to improve, or at least there will be a better version of the one that you have, so why is someone going to even bother with buying the one that you have because they already got a better one, or they could find a better one? So in the end, I think what I'm going to do is, I realize this too. You realize it after you move, and it's something that I hear from people every once in a while. Like my friend Counterpunch, he recently moved to a different state, and the thing that you really realize how much crap you have when you have to put every single thing into an organized box and transport it, and it you really start questioning, like, why do I have all this stuff? And it's a I think at this point I'm just gonna have to spend a day taking everything that I know I don't want, I can't sell, don't want to make the effort to sell, stick it in a pile, try to organize it best I can, and just like take it to Goodwill and let them do something with it other than it sitting in a box here or me throwing it away or waiting, having it sit around in a sales thread for years and it never sell in the first place.
Yeah. Like, hey, everyone who bought Movie One Swindle, the camera eye drone, who doesn't want it anymore, who's going to buy it from you? There you go. But, he goes on to say, thanks for answering my question. Oh, wait, Seth, do you sell stuff? I forgot.
No, I still don't. Okay. But, yeah, like, my logic on what I would sell is very similar to what Goggin said. It's just stuff that, you know, it's just not interesting anymore because newer, cooler stuff has happened. And maybe, I don't know if that's shallow or I don't know, but it's like all that old Armada stuff kind of seems lame now. Like, I mean, they've improved so much in engineering and whatnot. And that's not to say all old stuff is bad. There's definitely some really good old stuff that still holds up. Like some of those Beast War figures still hold up.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have nostalgia for anything, you know, that isn't from my childhood. Like where I can love a cruddy G1 figure because there's that thing has nostalgia. Nothing from Armada and Energon and Cybertron I have any sort of nostalgia for. I don't have nostalgia for the movies. So that stuff just kind of loses its luster. And a lot of that stuff I was buying just because I thought I was supposed to. or because I was still doing them funny robots. And I thought, oh, I could maybe make a joke with this guy. And then I bought him and made one comic strip with it in it. And then that was it. Like, that was the whole reason I bought it, was to make one comic strip that had no monetary value of its own. So yeah, just stuff like that would go. And like what Gog was saying about, you know, moving, like I have stuff in boxes from the last time I moved, like 6 years ago, that I haven't taken out of those boxes. And some of that stuff was in boxes from the time I moved before that. And it's like, why don't I just take this whole box and put it somewhere like far away, like take it to Goodwill or throw it off a bridge or anything.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, and then there's so many facets to this. And I think it's something that every collector has to deal with eventually. And like, that's the thing. Like, I don't even know what the word collector means anymore, because I don't feel like I have a collection. Like there's just stuff that I think is cool and I buy it because I like to tinker with it, and I get satisfaction out of messing with it, and it's interesting to me, and it makes my brain waves move in endearing ways. But as far as me like having an active collection that I try to maintain, that concept seems foreign to me, even though I probably by all definitions would still be considered a collector. It's just that word of it just seems to me of like, like, you know, someone wants to, I want to collect all of Armada. So you go out and you have a checklist and you actively try to get all those rare pieces because you want to have a complete collection. And like, that's totally not me. It's just like, ah, that's a good figure. Like, I'll get that. And so it's all semantics. I understand that. But eventually it's just, yeah, like you start to lose interest, but you have all this stuff you're not interested in, and it's like, ugh, I don't know. Yeah, and you see so many people, like, they go from one extreme to the other, where for years they've been buying everything, and they want to complete everything and get every single variation, and they just have stacks of boxes in their basement. It just has this, it's a really great collection. Like, they have all this cool stuff, and it's like a basic museum, and then people just will wake up one day, and it's like, I've been doing this out of habit for years, and I just know I'm not. I just have to finally admit to myself that I don't realize it anymore. And you see that happen every day.
Mm-hmm.
And then people will just say, like, why? Like, why am I spending money on something that I'm not enjoying? And like, that's the thing that I don't ever want to get to the point that I reach is me buying stuff that I don't like. And I think I do that to some degree already, because I'll buy stuff out of boredom. Like, there hasn't been anything out that I've wanted for a while, so it's like, well, you know, this, I heard people got a little satisfaction of it, but it's more me buying something out of curiosity because I am fascinated by the engineering of transforming robots and how they continue to make a car turn into a robot in 57 billion different ways. And yeah, I mean, everything is a little similar, but they still do little neat tricks and stuff every once in a while that you've never seen before, and it makes your brain spike. But eventually you hit a wall where it's like, well, if you've done that 20 times, you now have 20 figures that you never really wanted. And so you kind of have to rein it in. And I hope that I don't get to the point to where I just decide, like, yeah, I realize that I'm spending so much money on stuff that I don't want, and then I'm going to seesaw in the other direction and just get rid of all of it and not care anymore.
I've seen the Grand Purge happen so many times that I think I've actually been scared off it. Especially because I got into the fandom in a kind of odd time where, for the longest time, I was one of the youngest fans I knew while I was active in the fandom. So I was kind of like a decade and a half to 2 decades behind a lot of dudes I knew, and watch them go through the process of the full purge. And I just, like, it's something I can kind of understand in terms of, like, I'm going to get rid of a bunch of stuff I don't like, but the full purge is something I just could, I really, even now when I feel I'm a lot more mature than I was back in, like, you know, 10 years ago, I just still can't really see myself doing the full purge, like the big spooky, I'm going to get rid of everything purge.
Yeah, and I've... I've thought about that a great deal as well, and I think I could totally find myself in a position to where there is a very large amount, even a majority of things, that I could feel comfortable getting rid of just because I don't want to deal with the logistics of keeping that anymore. Mm-hmm. But I've already resigned myself to the fact of there's always going to be something that I'm interested in, even if it's only me buying one thing a year or less. Like, I've even considered maybe why buy a bunch of deluxes when I could just buy a couple of really high-end transforming toys a year. And then that would be a really, really interesting collection. Just have maybe like some masterpiece stuff, or just just getting the best of the best and keeping that and mixing in some other import, you know, Chogokin stuff from Japan or otherwise, and just maintaining a smaller but more, you know, quote-unquote high-end collection where you're basically spending the same amount of money. It's just instead of buying a crap load of small things, you just buy one or two big things a year. But regardless of where I go as I get older and maybe just decide, like I said, the logistics, I just don't want to deal with all this stuff anymore and get rid of it. I think me as a person, I don't see myself ever just saying, yeah, I'm just going to wake up one day and just quit the hobby. Because there's always, I know how my brain works, and there's always going to be something that's going to fascinate me. And certainly maybe in the future, my priorities will change as far as what I want and what I want to deal with as far as materialism. But there's always going to be something that's going to pique my interest, and whether or not that means that I keep everything I do or get rid of most of it, there's going to be something.
Yeah, for me, if I was to do a clearing out, like, G1 stuff would stay. That includes reissues. Animated, classics, all that stuff is safe. Masterpiece is safe. Everything else would probably go. Like, there might be the random figure or two from Energon or one of those kind of lines, but for the most part, that stuff would all go. But yeah, like, I kind of go through phases in my buying habits where, like, I'll get really excited about something and I'll try to get the whole deal, like, animated. And then there's stuff like the movie figures where every movie I get all hyped up and excited and I buy a bunch of movie stuff. And then within a couple of weeks, I'm like, man, I wish I didn't buy all that movie stuff. Oh, that was a bummer. Like, I'll get wrapped up in a hype wave. and then, like, early on when I got back into things, I was in that rush of everything's new and I want to experience as much newness as possible, and I was just buying everything I could. Now I'm in a phase of, well, I'm going to be more selective. I'm going to cut back on the spending and pick and choose a little bit more. And right now there's just nothing out there because it's movie stuff.
Yeah, it's definitely something to be aware of earlier than later. I think that's also something that can really help prevent the scary sort of full purge from happening. Like, just be aware of, you know, when hype affects you, when it doesn't, when things entertain you, when they don't. And the main thing is never feel obligated to do anything. That's the thing I've also learned from all of this, is like, whenever someone feels obligated to get everything or feels obligated to get rid of everything, they always eventually swap to the other end of the spectrum in some way, and usually not to an extreme. Like, I've said, I know a lot of guys who did the full purge. Several of those guys I saw, you know, within a few years come back and say, man, I wish I hadn't just purged everything. I wish I'd just purged some of it, because now I want to get some of it back. I want to have a small collection again. And it's like, yeah, you know, it's do it all in the gray zone between things. Operate on soft impulses and have a good time with it. Anyway, he goes on to say, thanks for answering my question. The one shall stand. P.S. Can you guess what my username is referencing? In brackets, I probably spelled this wrong. You know what his username is referencing? His username being The One Shall Stand?
That Jet Li movie?
Excellent.
No, the Stephen King novel.
I'm not going to tell you guys the real answer. I'm going to let the listeners decide. But thank you for your questions. The one shall stand. We have one more set of questions here from Zion14, who sent this in on July 9th, 2011. He says, first off, I'd like to start off by saying it's pronounced Sheon14. Oh, I called you Zion14. Oh, dear. This question comes to us from Sheon14. On to the question. Dear Vangelis and the Crescendolls, between Peter Cullen and Frank Welker and Gary Chalk and David Kay, what duo do you think best conveys the Optimus and Megatron role, including Beast Era? Who has the best range to their acting, immerse you, and fit as enemies the best? P.S. Mr. Biatis sounds like Piaw. Yeah. Well, that's all. Thanks for an answer. So, what duo do you think conveys the best pairing of Optimus and Megatron? Seth?
Yeah, and questions like this are always kind of weird for me because I don't really think about stuff in that kind of way.
Absolutely define to me the best pairing!
Except for when I'm put on the spot. I don't know, like the 80s way, like back in the 80s, the way Colin and what's-his-face did the voices, Walker. The way they did the voices, like those are the original voices, and they're what my mind defaults to. And even modern day Colin and Walker don't really match like that old voice. It's kind of amazing how different Peter Cullen does Optimus Prime now.
Yeah.
If you listen to an old G1 episode, Prime sounds way more kind of country than the statue that he is now, like the super gravitas, just a totally different vibe in movie/Prime Optimus Prime than G1 Optimus Prime. I mean, they're all good voice actors, so I don't think anyone does anything wrong or bad. Just they're, you know, different takes. I mean, and then comparing like Optimus Primal to Optimus Prime, I mean, it's a different character. So there's nothing wrong with it having a different tone or style. So I don't know. I think everybody does a good job.
Alrighty.
Everyone's trying real hard, and everybody gets a ribbon at the end of the contest. There's no losers here.
Gogdog, are there any losers or winners on your end?
I mean, I think the question, because I didn't get a chance to read it, so I only heard it from your oration. but I believe that the base of the question was, what is the best pairing of a, you know, the good guy versus the bad guy as far as, like, character fullness and voice acting and all that. So, I mean, of course, like, the classic G1 Prime versus G1 Megatron is great. I mean, those voices are great. And I agree with Seth. I think that those voices have changed over the years, but those original versions, I mean, call it nostalgia or whatever, but I think that was great. And, yeah, I mean, I think Primal versus Beast Wars Megatron was, I mean, it was awesome. Like, those were both great. And I actually think that Gary Chalk and the David Kay going against each other, because that went on for years. I mean, you had the whole Armada trilogy thing too, but I don't think any of that stuff topped the Beast Wars performances at all. But there's something to be said for animated, too, because I think David Kay did an exceptional job playing a young Optimus Prime, and Corey Burton as animated Megatron was freaking amazing. I think animated Megatron is still the best Megatron that we've ever gotten. And I don't necessarily count Beast Wars Megatron in that, because he's Beast Wars Megatron. He's not Megatron Megatron. He's not a new incarnation of Megatron, even though he may have been initially conceptualized that way in toy form. So, like, the whole, like, what's your favorite Megatron? Like, I don't know. To me, the Beast Wars Megatron is never, should never be added to that list. I'll go with animated, because having that young Prime who is just unsure of himself and is trying to find his way as a leader versus the Megatron that deals with Prime by saying that, oh, who are you again? I forgot your name. And just that sinister voice and the absolute genius behind the character. Like, that's probably my favorite. And then close follow-up would be G1 Prime and Megatron, I think.
Yeah, for me, I get, like, I'm much like Seth. I hate having to think, really. I don't think this way very much. So, and in my case, I hate being put on the spot. Especially, I hate it when I have to rank stuff. So I'm like, I've become real neurotic about rank when it comes to ranking what the criteria are. And these questions always kind of make me twitch. But, like, if I was going to make a criteria for this myself, if I were going to ask myself this question, I'd say, like, if we're going to talk duos, for me, I'd want to think which duo felt like two characters that were on par and able to be polarizing against each other to the most smooth degree. And I've always felt that the David K. Gary Chalk chemistry felt the most like two guys who were on equal ground, in a way, who could stand up to each other no matter what was going on and go at each other for a really long time. And I will definitely say this is not to talk down in any way, shape, or form any of those other actors, because I'm very much in line with Gog. I think that the way that Megatron and Optimus were voiced and portrayed and animated was fantastic. Although in that case, it was very much a relationship of Megatron was clearly, at least for some time, meant to be the dominating and somewhat superior character. So if I were to go more like, when were they at their most equal and polarizing, like two opposites of the same magnet, then I might say the Beast era was, and I guess the Unicron trilogy by proxy was very close. It's easier for me to point out the worst Prime Megatron pair off, because there's only one that I think didn't work in any way, shape, or form. And that is when, inexplicably, Robots in Disguise decided to get a completely different voice actor to play the combined form of Ultra Magnus and Optimus Prime. Which meant that in the final episode of R.I.D., when you know, Omega Prime and Galvatron have their final showdown, Neil Kaplan isn't even in the studio. It's that guy who does this voice all the time for Omega Prime doing the whole thing. And it just sounds like, it sounds like more so than ever before in that entire show, it sounds like nobody's even in the same room with each other. And so that's always, like, for some reason that just jumped into my mind when I read this question, was, oh, there's always that one that didn't work, which was that one.
Well, I mean, nobody wants to be in the same room as that guy.
The guy who did Omega Prime? Guy always just talks like general, this.
Just any that guy.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Everybody has at least one that guy in their life, and you don't want to be in the same room as that guy.
But, yeah, I don't know. I hope that answered your question. Shion 14. It is time for an intermission, and then we're going to be back with acquisitions. Will they be on topic or off topic? Will they be both? Will they be skewed? Okay, you spoiled it. All right, so it's going to be very off. There you go. So get ready to be enraged, listener. But first, a quiet intermission.
MSG in the hall, and we're feeling really hot. Yeah, Eastside Chinatown, bitch. You're going to die. Just coming out the dead hole with the neck roll. Got a 57 Magnum, feeling loco. And you know, I never go solo.
Got your homie Funky Buddha
and your boy D-Lo.
I am the man, goddamn. Hong Kong, feel what the son of Sam. Try to catch me if you can. I kill 10 people with a frying pan. Big boy with a liver, to the highest bidder. Win that three's company. I ain't Jack Tripper, but I do like a sexy lady. Always gonna drive me crazy. Cause pretty girl will get you flustered. See a fine bitch, yo, don't trust her, baby. Gonna try to play me, buster. You mess with the OG.
I'm gonna jack you up, shake you down, take you on down to Chinatown. I tie you down,
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to WTF at TFW, a Transformers podcast by Transformers fans. Did you guys see my new signature picture?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, borderline trollish. I like it.
I'm
righteously indignant about it.
I got a suggestion from a regular cog, but I preferred the composition of this photo. He said I should crop it even more so that the Transformer is halfway cut off the photo on the very end. But
I like that.
I like the composition of this more, so I kept it. But I don't know. I might mess with it. We're going to talk about what we got this week. By the way, check out my signature picture. Are you mad? Yeah, all right. I got some Transformers this week. Mind if I talk about my Transformers I got?
Be my guest.
All right.
I don't want to hear about it.
I got a couple of those new tiny Star Wars crossovers that I almost bought off of Aaron and Jared at TFCon. I got General Grievous and I got Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Juan?
Yes, with a J.
Juan. Hello, I am Obi-Wan.
Obi-Wan
Kenobi. I have the lightsaber that your father left behind.
You'll become a Jedi Knight.
Come with me to my desert casa.
Desert casa. So,
I'm Obi-Wan.
The General Grievous... unfortunately, actually didn't turn out as well as I'd hoped. I'd messed with the Obi-Wan a whole bunch at TFCon, and I was really impressed by it compared to older Star Wars Transformers. General Grievous, I will say, does a whole bunch of stuff right. He's very simple to transform, and he's got a solid silhouette. But the thing I wish he did is I wish that his backpack slid down. There's a pin joint on his back, and I cannot tell you what it's connected to. I've held a flashlight down his spine. There's something connected to it back there. I thought it was a joint, but it turns out it's not, unless I'm just really not forcing enough.
I've been seeing that more and more on Hasbro figures where they pin things and it looks like it's supposed to swivel, but it's nothing more than it's just supposed to keep something held together.
Yeah, and this thing...
And it bugs me because I'll see it and I'm like, oh, please, this has got to do something, and it's not. It's just holding something in place. I keep seeing that.
And so it's a bummer, because otherwise, if he had his backpack moving, and if he had, like, one more point of articulation, this would be a really fun little Grievous. It's still pretty neat. It's kind of cool in that he's got the four lightsabers, but the way it works is his arms are basically like these four pods, and each one of them can have a lightsaber extend out of them, which is a kind of neat look. And, like, it's a fun little toy. It's poseable enough, and, you know, way more usefully poseable, I think, than a lot of Star Wars Transformers tend to be. And the funny thing about it is the robot mode is completely and utterly visible underneath the vehicle mode. So the vehicle mode looks great from the top down. Then you flip it over and Grievous is literally just sitting there going like, what's up, bro? I'm General Grievous. Cough, cough. So I still think it's kind of a fun figure, but it's definitely not as mind-blowing and game-changing as I think some people would prefer it to be. The one, though, that I'd messed with at TFCon that I'd made sure to get was Obi-Wan, because his robot mode is actually a really nicely articulate little robot man. He's only missing a neck joint and a waist joint, but otherwise, he is, like, fully poseable. He's got, like, ball-jointed shoulders, bicep swivels and elbow joints, ball-jointed hips, knee joints with a ball swivel, so he can, like, re-aim his knees. He has one crippling flaw, though, which is it's funny, because this was the very first crippling flaw of a Star Wars Transformer, way back in Wave 1 of the big ones. His feet are pointless. They work, but you have to learn the science of how they work, because he has these toes that fold down from the front of his shins, and then he has no heels behind them at all. It's literally an empty space, with a piece sticking off the back that looks like it's supposed to fold down to form a heel, but there's no joint there. So I figured out after a while, there is a way to get him to stand. You just have to realize that he has to kind of like stand on the balls of his feet rather than on, you know, in a human way. But then again, he's supposed to be in space. So if you just put him on a little flying stand, he's awesome. He's just this little young Obi-Wan. He's got two lightsabers. He turns into a vehicle mode that looks totally decent. He's got an R2-D2 stuck in his back. In the vehicle mode, though, again, when you flip it over and look underneath, it is just Obi-Wan looking at you, going like, what? Do something. I'll cut your arm off. So, the Obi-Wan, if you're going to get one of these just to see what these new small ones are like, Obi-Wan, I think, is the pick of the litter. Unless there's something about Anakin I don't know about. But going by box pictures, Anakin did not look like he was going to be any better than Grievous. And I was like, if I'm going to get two of these, I want it to be Grievous and Obi-Wan so they can fight. Those are all the Transformers I got. I have become that thing that you all hate, dear listener. I just funded Star Wars Transformers.
Oh, no.
Bring it.
You a-hole.
Come at me.
You're cheapening the hobby.
Which of you bitches wants to dance? That's right. Yo, Seth.
I like dancing.
What? What Transformers did you get?
I got none.
I know that, again. But I was asking that just to get that out in the...
Yep, there's just movie stuff out there, and I'm kind of not into it right now.
That is okay.
My bad.
But, Gog Dog, did you get any Transformers?
I did, and I'm going to put something in my on topic that might offend some people, but we'll get to that in a moment.
Uh-oh.
I actually did buy an official transforming Transformer.
Oh.
I got this guy for reasons.
I can't see him. Oh.
Sure you can if you click that link.
All right. I was waiting for it to make a noise.
Into your microphone.
Hey! Dude, I was looking at the Optimus Prime from that line because Phil Reed on Battle Grip suddenly has this massive love for that Optimus Prime. And I was like, maybe I should pick it up. And then I was like, it's $15.
Yeah.
If it was $10, I would have bought it.
It was $10 when I bought this one. Well, it was on sale.
Okay.
But
yeah.
What we're talking about is Rescue Bots Bumblebee. Yep. There are three of the, I guess, deluxe price point Rescue Bots that transform. There's Bumblebee, there's Prime, and there's what?
The
Firebot or something?
Yeah, the firefighter guy.
Yeah. So I think the other two kind of look like garbage. They have giant gaping holes under their heads, and the Bumblebee looks the best out of all of them. The only reason why I bought the Bumblebee is because every time I look at that triangle smile, I think of Masamune Shiro. as I did in that picture. It's not perfect, but it's every time I saw it, it just, because I have kind of an inside joke where I always call the Shiro face design the cheerleader face, because he always designs, he always draws his little anime girls like they're just, they're got their pom-poms in the air, and they got this stupid super cheerleader exaggerated like yeah face, and like every time I see this Bumblebee as I passed him in the store, he just looked like he was doing the exact same thing. So let's break it down. Like, this is a toy that is probably made for a three-year-old,
specifically, in fact, I believe made for a three-year-old.
Yeah. We've seen toys like this, you know, all the time. And over the last few years, they've been almost entirely movie toys, which, again, as we've discussed at least some point since the movies, or since some point since we've been doing this podcast and talking about the movie toys, it's a little weird when you see, like movie Megatron, like, marketed to a three-year-old.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I've never been a prude when it comes to that stuff, but it's always a little weird when you see...
Dude shot an elephant in the face.
Yeah. You know, or people. You know, or people, or through, you know, whatever. But, and another problem that I've always had is, and I've said it many times, I don't ever think that they successfully kiddified the movie line, or even able to really miniaturize those faces or anything. Whenever they take a movie aesthetic and try to simplify it in a way that looks like it's like the I don't know what those things are called, but the little, when they do like the power bots and stuff, like with Prime you can do it because he kind of looks G1-esque with this faceplate and it's a lot simpler, but when you take the mangled metal aesthetic and try to really kiddify that and make it kind of super deformed or whatever, I just don't think it ever works. And maybe with Ironhide and Bumblebee, but for the large percentage, whatever, of those things, I just don't think they ever work aesthetically.
I think these things, on an aesthetic level, for this age group, it's really great. And it uses that really kind of neo G1 classics aesthetic, where it's not blocks, it's more rounded, and maybe it takes a little bit of cues from some of the more recent stuff, but it's much more simplified and blocky and almost G1-esque. And Bumblebee is really, really simple to transform. Like, you just literally just, you push the hood down and his head and arms pop out. You pull the legs out and then they're there. And it doesn't really do a whole lot. I mean, it doesn't really do much at all. But it's, I think, for like a 3-year-old kid, if you have kids that are really young, I think these are really, really cool. And even aesthetically, I just think that they work so much better than anything aimed at that age group that Transformers have seen in years. I think it was really wise for them to launch this line. But another interesting thing is the box art for Bumblebee shows his arms kind of sticking forward. But when you take him out of the packaging for the first time, his arms can't move at all. And I noticed that he's got two little gray parts around his shoulder joints that are held in place by a screw. And if you take those out, literally the only purpose that those serve is they have little teeth that keep the arms from moving. So if you take the time to just unscrew those, you take those pieces out, it leaves a little bit of a gaping hole around the shoulder joint, but then the arms can move all of about 35 degrees forward. So I don't know if it really accomplishes anything, but you add a small amount of articulation. And I think that it was planned to be like that, where that you could move the arms a little bit, but I think maybe when they were trying to finalize exactly what these figures would be, they decided that maybe having that added articulation, now when you just try to do the simple, I'm just going to pop the hood up and transform it, if the arms aren't in the right position, then it'll get stuck, and they wanted it to be as simple as possible, so they added that little piece or redesigned that little piece to prevent the arms from moving at all. But the arms do move like they do in the box if you take it out. But yeah, I mean, they're not for collectors. I mean, if you're like a super Bumblebee fan, like Dimooch, Josh Perez, I'm sure he already owns one because he was in love with this day one. I saw his Twitter. But I think for most people, I mean, it's not aimed at adults. It's not. But the Bumblebee, like, I don't like Bumblebee. Like, we've talked in the past about how I think Hasbro and Paramount or any number of factors has kind of killed Bumblebee from being the small underdog that everybody loves to just the overexposed kind of weird guy that we're just kind of tired of. And I think this Bumblebee just super departs from that. And it's the first time I've ever looked at a Bumblebee since, I don't know, for a very long time. And I'm like, that's Bumblebee. Like, he's cute. He's great. And he's got, as far as the other rescue bots go, I think he's actually kind of well proportioned, and he's kind of funny. But like, yeah, I mean, it's not for most people, but it's, I don't know, it's I like the aesthetic on him, and he's kind of neat for what he is.
I'm gonna come right out and say, like, I was actually really bummed when I still kind of like the look, mostly because I saw how he transforms. I kind of like the look of the Optimus Prime just as a conversation piece, because it kind of uses tech that reminds me of the gravity bots from Revenge of the Fallen, which I had this really indescribable love for in terms of how they transformed.
Yeah. But it's like, yeah, I understand what you mean in that too. Cause it's like, it's minimalist. It's totally minimal, input from the person, but a very kind of satisfying and like positive movement engagement feedback from the toy.
Yeah.
Like you very small amount of effort put in, but a noticeably larger amount of reaction from what you're putting into it.
Yeah, and that's why I was bummed when I saw the Prime was $15, because I was like, well, I'm, you know, in a moment of poor judgment, I am prepared to drop a tenner on this. But 15, see, for me, $10 for me is kind of like my gimmick price, where it's like, if I'm going to buy this thing because it does something I think is cool, I'm willing to pay up to $10 for it. And then I saw it was 15, and I was like, see, that goes just outside of my realm of comfort for this. So I'm going to wait. I'm sure it's not going to be impossible to find one for $10 or less someday down the road. But I also just kind of like them because they are really, I think, just as a preschool property, there's something really positive on how they were done. And by all means, as Gog said, I'm not sitting here trying to go like, so you should all go out and buy some of these preschooler toys as well. Because guess what? They're preschooler toys. you gotta just have this, you gotta have the same reason for wanting them that I do, of kind of like this just moment of, I want this thing that does this very specific thing.
I'll be honest, I also just kind of wanted to have an informed opinion on what these were. And you can't really even though the gimmick is kind of simple, you can't transform them in the package. They're zipped, or they're tie wrapped down. But it was like, okay, like now I know what the deal was with this, and I can honestly say, like, if you have young children, this, I think these are really cool. And as a kid, I probably would have loved this if I was really young. So, and I think it's far and away better than previous attempts that they've made to fulfill that age range than they have in the past, even on a visual level. But like, that's my personal taste. But
yeah,
the other thing I got on topic, and you know, there's perfectly good reasons for putting this on topic, but I got a certain little blue domed headed robot who's, you know, he's an 80s robot, and he's mm-hmm. technically owned by Hasbro. He's a transforming robot owned by Hasbro.
Oh.
They've kind of been forcefully removed from their own continuity and placed into Transformers. Right?
Oh, you're talking about Wildstorm.
I got Super GoBot Psycho, because GoBots! Like the last time we were talking about Bug Bite, and Bug Bite is totally part of official G1 fiction, because you know, he even had a BotCon figure.
This guy over here is talking about the GoBots.
But this is Hasbro might, probably doesn't have the right to use these toys because they're owned by Bandai, but they have the character rights, so you know, it's part of. There's been plenty of GoBots appearing in Transformers, like we got the Crasher Classics Repaint a Mirage, and we've seen Psykill pop up in the IDW comics a few times, but
keep your distance from this guy. They're gonna take pictures of him.
But after we had talked the last time, like I totally went on to eBay and was looking for a Bug Bite, and it's like the only really ones that were in good condition that I wanted were a little more expensive, but yeah, I totally saw this Psycho that was in really good condition, and I think it, like after shipping and everything, it was only about $20, super cheap. And he's in really good shape, and I am totally on board now with I want to now purchase the entire first wave of Super GoBots, which are the dome headed ones.
Yeah, those things were those things were
minus
boss.
Destroyer, which is a tank turret head, but regardless, I think it was I'm trying to remember. There was Psycho, Bug Bite,
Baron Von Joy,
Air Fiend, which I was totally gonna get a good, super good condition Air Fiend, and got sniped with 5 seconds left. Baron Von Joy, Zemon, and there's Destroyer, and then there's one left. I can never remember his name. It's a Renegade, because there were 4 Renegades and 2 Guardians.
Yeah, I only remember the Tank Renegade, and
that was Destroyer.
Oh, Doctor something something.
Huh?
Oh, the other Renegade one was a Nazi doctor with a monocle.
No, that was Dr. Go. That's Air Fiend. They renamed him in the show.
Oh, okay. I love Dr. Go.
Yeah, that's the one that I was totally gonna buy. Oh no, I did name them all. It's Psycho, Air Fiend, Destroyer, and Bug Bite, and then Baron Von Joy and Zemon. Yeah, okay, I did name them. So, but I totally want an Air Fiend, and I missed it, but I'm on board. There's only 6 of them. I got one, so I need 5 left, but they're not that hard to find.
Really? There's not a burgeoning GoBot collecting community that's buying
well,
all
apparently, these dickheads are sniping me on my auctions, but
they're out there, but they're hiding.
Yeah, they are. They're hiding on the mound with the rifles. But no. Oh, yeah. I think Seth was right. I think he said that the Super GoBots held up for the most part. And I agree. I think with a couple of extra joints, these things would be great. Like a full-fledged neck joint. I think that would have been hard for what they were at the time to put in an articulated neck that transformed the way it did for its time. I mean, these things are from 1984. So these are the exact same range as G1 Transformers, but... Yeah, super cool. Psycho is awesome. He's so photogenic, and I never had one. I always wanted one, but
now you have one, and the ire of so many angry young people.
Yeah, like, and who was it? I think I was talking to JD. It was like me, him, and Andy. I was wondering like what the reaction was going to be when you start posting GoBot pictures, and it, like we were trying to figure out like is the days of it being cool to hate GoBots over, because that was really a couple years ago, like in full swing, like oh GoBots and it, that really seems to have died down lately. And I think for the most part, like yeah, you're going to still get some people every once in a while that are like oh yeah GoBots and it's funny to a certain degree, but GoBots had, they had some good toys. I mean, those were made by Bandai, and as we've discussed in the past, like Bandai has a reputation for being on the top of their game when it comes to transforming robot toys, and I certainly feel like in the past decade, they've definitely been the highest end as far if you want transforming robots from Japan. You're going to pay for them because they're really expensive.
Yeah,
so, but
how many times have we said high end this episode?
I keep track. I know it's almost becoming a meme at this point.
You know what? Okay, so I've been editing an episode of Audio Sonic I recorded at BotCon when I interviewed George K and those other dudes when we met Will. And I said high end like 15 times in a row, and this is before Pre-Order 66 was really a thing. I think. Were they before BotCon?
Literally 15 times in a row, like, you just went high-end, 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 high-end.
I was like, so you guys buy any high-end Star Wars toys? It's a pretty high-end Star Wars toys. Did you get anything on the high-end? And I swear to you, at that time, it was not a joke that I was trying to make. It was just a word I was using. And then I listened to it, and I was just sitting there going, like, man, I can't not hear myself being an asshole saying it now.
But the, like I when I when I was looking when I was getting this when I was buying Psycho, like I was looking through the box art, right? Because that was I only had the one Super GoBot, but the thing that fascinated me was the box art, because I remember just looking at the box art and just staring at it like entranced by it. I'm gonna post this here. This is the front of Psycho's box, but I kept wondering, why was I so fascinated with it? And then I looked at that, and it totally hit me. While the Transformers were totally basically human in robot form for the most part, like, and I think for the most part, probably the GoBots were as well. I mean, I'm just talking like as far as characters go. Like they were, like okay, you have Prime, you have Megatron, but they have faces. They're human beings. They act like human beings. They sound like human beings. They look like human beings. So yeah, I mean they're giant robots, but for the most part they're very human like. Yeah. You know what I mean? But like when you looked at these first wave of Super GoBots, like they had featureless faces. It was just like domes and windows, just blank heads. Like they had they didn't have like the human representation that I think most robots of the day did. And the box art, like, of that right there, like I just posted, with Psycho. He's just holding his arm straight out and just firing a laser down, probably at some dude. And, yeah. these were totally portrayed as straight-up, like, robot kaiju. Like, yep.
There's artwork of them, which I think literally makes them look like they're walking over a desert field shooting at an army. I know this piece of artwork like
that. And I think that was my fascination with the Super GoBots when I was younger, is this wasn't just some dude who was either a good guy or a bad guy, but had like the human face and could smile or whatever. Like these would just be cars, and then they would transform from cars and just walk around and just blow everything up. But they had no expression, no face, no emotion. And I think that's like why I was so fascinated with these things. And it totally hit me after I had bought Psycho. I'm like he's totally a kaiju. Like he's not like the Transformers box art would show them like in like an action pose or something, but doing something kind of human-like. And like, look at Psycho. He's just straight out. Like he looks like a Japanese kaiju just walking around shooting laser beams and everything.
But so, what's really cool is when they showed up in the show, almost all of them got given human features on their domes, except for the heroic one, Zemon. Like, Zemon literally just had the dome face, and it would just glow when he talked. And I always thought as a kid that was really, really weird. But he had an old man Texan voice. He'd be like, "Oh, let me tell you all about the renegades are coming." And his face would just, his plate would just glow as he said it all. That's really cool, though. Super Gobots are totally legit toys to look into. I have a busted up Psycho in a box somewhere from a garage sale when I was in elementary school. He's missing a ton of parts. But nonetheless, his transformation is like, there's just pieces moving in it. That's why, anyone out there who thinks Super Gobots suck, go buy one first and then tell me if you think they suck.
Yeah, a lot of stuff they did in Gobots were really ahead of the time. Even in some of the little ones, like a lot of little ones are super, super basic, where you just straighten the arms out and flip the legs over, and now it's a helicopter. Okay. But there were some little ones that were pretty inventive, and a lot of these Super Gobots are even more so. Like I was saying, that Psykill and Leader 1 that I have, you know, two more points of articulation, and you know, they stand up against just about anything that's out there now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I also think I'm super fascinated with Psycho, because I totally don't think that a toy company would even try to get away with calling a Transformer or something now Psycho. Like, could you imagine? I don't know. I mean, maybe. They surprise me every once in a while, but just that name itself is just like, hey, what's your name? Oh, I'm Scooter. I'm Psycho. Jesus Christ, man.
I heard that Psycho is one of those terms that if it were on a toy would probably get the same treatment Spastic got.
I could see it. And yet another reason why Psycho is awesome. Like everybody should own
a
Psycho.
Breaks the rules.
Yeah. But he's just a walking destruction machine. No face, like no features. He just has his arms straight out, walking around, shooting laser beams at people. Like, have you identified the target's name? Target is now identified as Psycho. Like the general goes, yeah, it fits.
It's Psycho, and it's just a sports car walking around like a monster. I love it.
So yeah, that's it for my on topic. Psycho's totally on topic, as far as I'm concerned.
I will not disagree.
If I get any more Super Gobots in the future, they're going into the on-topic section.
Oh, it's been laid down. Do something about it, listener. Anyway, I'm going to open up our off-topic, hobby-breaking betrayal section with Seth.
Hi.
Hello.
I came really close to almost not having anything at all this week.
Ah!
But then some pre-orders came in, and then I found something I had given up finding, the Captain America movie Red Skull.
Oh, I saw your twit pic about that.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I'm like, oh my God. And I found it at Kmart, which makes it even more miraculous.
Double amazing.
So got a Red Skull. And then I was like really kind of gentle with them, because somebody had posted somewhere, or somebody told me, like, they got a Red Skull, and, like, his arm immediately broke. So I was like, okay, I'm going to make sure that all these joints are working right, nothing's stuck, and I'm just going to twist the peg off in the hole or whatever. So, yeah, he's really skinny little guy, so I definitely feel like you got to be careful with him. One thing that stinks is his gun-holding hand is small, and the handle on the Luger that he comes with is super fat, so he cannot hold it straight.
Oh.
He always kind of holds it at a wonky angle, and that's disappointing. And then his other hand is sculpted in this big kind of wide grip to hold the cosmic cube that it comes with, that you can barely tell is a cube because they sculpted so much like energy smoke coming off of it that you hardly see any of the cube shape.
So it kind of looks more like the cosmic splat,
or just like energy, hand comic book hand energy.
Is it like Kirby energy?
Yeah, like smoke energy.
Ah.
Hard. That kind of thing that you only see in comic. But otherwise, you know, it's good. I'm glad to have it. Then the pre-orders that came in were more Marvel figures.
Hey!
I'm getting all Marvel crazy. I got two packs.
Oh!
So I got the Power Man and Iron Fist two-pack.
Is it a 70s Power Man?
Yes.
Oh! I like that already. I didn't know they were making
a yellow shirt, metal headband, chain belt, the whole deal. And he kind of suffers from that thing that a lot of Marvel figures suffer from, like going all the way back to Marvel Legends from Toy Biz, is his back is so broad and like his lat muscles are so pronounced that his arms are always kind of sticking out.
Oh, he's like got almost like the wings under his arms of pure lateral.
Yeah.
Mush.
So you kind of got to like turn his arms in so the bulging tricep doesn't push in as much, and then he could get his arms a little farther down, but then it looks like he's got this weird kind of arm stance, and even then his arms are sticking out crazy. But, I mean, you could pose him with his like fists on his hips. Then it works a little better. It's just weird. What you got, sucker? And Iron Fist. It's good. And like, I'm assuming that they've recycled parts for both these guys, but also just the nature of their costumes. Like,
yeah.
Like, they probably reused the legs for Power Man from somewhere, but they had to sculpt a whole new upper body just because of how that shirt works. And or at least retool the chest and shoulders part of Iron Fist because he has that big collar. Then his sash. But
I have a question right about them.
They have no thigh swivels.
Oh! All right.
I was about to point out their lack of thigh swiveliness.
I was getting impatient.
Then the other two back, I'm much more excited about. These were listed at BBTS as a set. And this is the two pack I really wanted. And then I was like, oh, you know, Power Man and Iron Fist are cool. So I don't really feel bad about having to get them to get these. And that is Spider-Man.
Yay.
And the original costume for Captain Britain. So my Captain Britain collection grows.
Ah!
Talking about Spider-Man, he comes with that accessory that all these Spider-Men come with, which is his like web thing that kind of attaches to his wrist and one end shoots out. And that would look fine if it wasn't for the giant bunched up knot of web that then goes past his wrist.
Yeah.
The other direction, which makes it look like his web shooter must have malfunctioned and spraying webbing all over the place. And not just straight out, but it like backed up and did a backfire, a webbing, and they got to redesign a web accessory for Spider-Man because this thing looks awful. But this is a newer mold Spider-Man. This isn't the Spider-Man mold that everybody hates.
Oh, this is the one that Scarlet Spider uses?
I don't have a Scarlet Spider, so I don't know.
Wow.
But it works better. It works better than that other mold, for sure.
Does it?
And he does have... Yes, he has this one.
Yeah! Woo-hoo! Hey!
The only problem I have with it, though, is when you line his leg up so all the sculpted muscle is in proper alignment, it doesn't look he's standing properly. Like he gets all kind of funky-legged. But it's a huge improvement over the older Spider-Man mold.
I know one reason why it's a huge improvement.
Leg swivels?
Yes!
Well, speaking of thigh swivels, that's something that Captain Britain doesn't have.
Oh.
And as disappointing as that may be, the paint apps on Captain Britain are really great. because he doesn't have a lot. I mean, he's mostly red. Like, from the waist down, he is nothing but red. But where the paint apps are, they're complicated. Like, around his wrists, he has, like, both wrists are completely wrapped around with Union Jacks. And that's not an easy pattern.
Yeah.
And they're clean. There's no big blotches or splotches. Then he has, like, two, like, quarter Union Jacks on his forehead, which are partially covered by his hair coming out the top of his mask. And that's all clean and well done. Like, they're not bleeding into his hair, and his hair isn't bleeding down onto them.
That's better than my Captain America Captain Britain with his, like, really cool metallic paint that is also all kind of mushing together a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I got lucky with that because I have that same Captain Britain that is much cleaner than others I've seen in packages and seen in pictures.
Yeah.
And then he has a big gold lion on his chest.
Nice.
Which is a complicated shape on a complicated surface because it's two pieces making up his torso. So you have that gap there and his pecs and his abs, and that's all very clean and well done. So I mean, just very, very well done paint apps.
Excellent.
It's good. And he comes with his magical mace and his magical necklace. Because Captain Britain's magical.
Magic of Britain.
And that's it. That's all I got. Deal with it.
I was hoping you were going to say that you got some, because you were talking about it before. I wanted to flip out about a set that includes a raccoon in it.
Oh, crap. I did get that.
Okay, can I flip out about it for a sec?
I totally forgot.
Because that is the first Marvel Universe set in ages since the Darkhawk announcement to get me super jazzed, because I love...
It's in stock at BBTS right now.
I love Guardians of the Galaxy a lot. And I'm really happy they made it.
Okay, run those guys down. Star-Lord comes with two guns. I'm not really familiar with this character.
I'm only familiar with him after Annihilation. He existed before Annihilation, but it was Annihilation in the post-Annihilation fiction that turned him into the far more endearing leader of the Guardians of the Galaxy. He has a cool helmet. Like,
yeah, and I don't really know anything about this character. I meant to look him up on Comic Vine and learn, but I hadn't gotten a chance yet. And he's kind of got a problem with his thigh swivel, too, where he has a red stripe going down the side of his leg.
Mm-hmm.
And when you twist his leg to line that stripe up, it makes him pigeon-toed.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why would you do that? Why would you do that to my Star-Lord, Hasbro?
Well, maybe that's a character trait of his. That's his weakness.
No, it's
every hero
not.
Needs a weakness, and his weakness is he's pigeon-toed.
Star-Lord's weakness is that he's just an ordinary dude. That's his whole thing.
So he doesn't have powers? Is that his deal?
In his Guardians of the Galaxy get-up, his only power is that he is a clever and somewhat lucky guy who's good with a pair of guns.
Okay, well, his name is way too grandiose.
His name comes from fiction I haven't read.
Yeah, well, a name like Star-Lord, you think he'd have, like, crazy super cosmic powers and could shoot energy blasts, which made me wonder why he's packing heat.
Yeah, but, in Guardians of the Galaxy, he's become more of just a dude with guns who often does not like the fact that he is still referred to by people as the Star-Lord.
Maybe he lost his powers or something.
Yeah, I like him.
He used to be awesome.
In post-Annihilation, he's great.
Okay, Drax. I have to dig out my Absorbing Man to really compare, but I think it's pretty much just the Absorbing Man mold with a new head. Because I know the legs and the waist down is definitely the Absorbing Man parts, and I'm pretty sure the rest of the body is too. But, you know, they do a green wash on it, and he's got a new head, and he's alright.
I forgot.
And then I took this.
Does the absorbing man have in the legs the swiveling thigh?
No, he predates that.
But Drax is like Riddick.
Well, he has a belt, and on the belt are two little sheaths, so you could put his daggers back there.
Okay, I'm okay with that.
So it's all right. And then I took the green camouflage coat off of my Rebel Endor commando and put it on him because I didn't want his nakedness. He needed more clothes. It doesn't fit very well. It doesn't get up over his shoulders.
Few things fit Drax very well.
I'm going to tweet a picture of it at you in a minute when I'm done here.
Trolling me with your clothed Drax.
Then I've thrown the box away and I can't remember this character's name, but you get this tiny little dude in a flower pot.
That's Groot. He's Rocket Raccoon's partner.
Is he confined to a flower pot?
Well, Groot is from a race of tree people who can grow to be enormously huge. And at some point in his career post-Annihilation, Groot was seemingly destroyed, but it turns out that he was just busted down to a sapling and then grew back after Rocket Raccoon collected his remains and planted them. Groot comes from a planet of tree people who all communicate by saying the words "I am Groot" in different tones and psychic wavelengths.
Sounds annoying.
It's played pretty well. They play it irritatingly for a while, but then it's that thing where it's like they do it so much it goes past that barrier and becomes awesome again.
All right. Well, and then the last figure, and the reason why I saved him for last is because he's the whole reason why I went for this set. Rocket Raccoon himself.
Yes.
Kind of disappointed.
I was already kind of prepared for what disappointed you about him.
He only has 2 points of articulation. Right. He has a ball-jointed head, and he has a ball-jointed tail. And that's it. Even if he just had simple cut shoulders so he could move his arms a little bit instead of just the sculpted arms out. So when you put his really cool looking rifle in his one hand, he's just holding it out to the side.
Yeah.
Like up and out. Like he has a very come at me bro pose, but that's all that he will ever have.
That's a bummer.
And, I would have been okay with his legs being sculpted. I would have been okay with no waist at all. I would have been okay with basic little bit of movement, or I would have loved just a little bit of movement in his arms. And I understand that with his size, there's limitations and parts get small, but, you know, they could have done something.
Yeah, I mean, with him and Groot, it's kind of like they took a 2-pack and then managed to sort of BS it into a 4-pack by putting Groot and Raccoon in there, but basically as large accessories.
Well, and they kind of did that with the Avenger pack. Like, they included Ant-Man and the Wasp, but they're just tiny little figures. And you know, I think that's fine. But, I mean, it's not even really a 3-pack when you consider how little Rocket Raccoon does. It's like, it's a 2.5-pack.
That's not enticing.
But otherwise, like, the paint job and the sculpting on Rocket Raccoon are cool. It's just, he just suffers from the articulation.
That's a shame.
And that is actually it.
All right. I got a couple off-topic things that I can quickly go through here. First one of which being I got... This is like the 8th figure I've gotten of this design. This is Ryuki. He's the Kamen Rider show that got me onto Tokusatsu way, way back, right after I was just finishing up high school. And they sold him with his giant-ass dragon, which is really big. And it comes with a stand with 3 articulate arms of 3 different lengths to hold the dragon on the stand. And I kind of dig that. But I haven't messed with it too much. I just kind of popped it out to see what the figure's like, and it's a very well-done figure. So if you're considering Figuarts Ryuki, get it, if you can find it for a normal price. wish that the other guys from that show were going to have their monsters packed in, because that was really the draw to me of this figure. And it's very well done. Lots of fine-ass little details. He has these tiny little cards. He can stick them into the tiny little card reader on his wrist. It's really thoughtfully put together. I like it quite a bit. I also got me a belated birthday box from my mom, who got me some Kahlgrim Glioses, which are the skull-faced, taller Glios mans. And box had five of them in it, and I guess because there were five of them in it, Jesse Moore, the guy who does Kahlgrim, threw in a couple of accessory packs on top in a color scheme that you can't actually buy them in. It's from some old release, so that was kind of neat. And on the other end of the artistic toy realm, I got my retail Armstrongs from Vinyl Purgatory. Those are the...
Lucky.
I don't know. 1 to 12 scale.
I still haven't heard from the dude that I ordered mine from.
Vinyl Purgatory gave me a shipping confirmation, but then I couldn't actually look up my order on their site, so I got kind of freaked out for a bit, but they showed up. And here's the weird thing. They showed up in a giant box, and I was like, why is this box so big? And so I got the four Armstrongs, and then for some reason there was an Aust Republic Large Martin in the box as well. And I still don't know why. I think it's because nobody wants it. And the box was already huge, but I'm not entirely sure. That aside, the Armstrongs are really, I think, well done. And they kind of cemented my opinion that if you want to pick up an effective bang for your buck, like $50 3A robot, and you can get over the fact that it looks like a giant bullet with a backpack and limbs, the Armstrong, to me, is my favorite of the bunch. It offers this really nice combination of... it's obviously in the style of this series of robots, and it provides you with decent posability. You get a very non-fragile feeling set of posable hands as opposed to the drop cloths or the birdies. It comes with a nice big weapon, and if your joint tolerances are really good, like on my Jerry the Vampire Armstrong, his joint tolerances are so aces that, like, he feels like a perfect action figure to me of this doofy-looking robot, and I love it. Only problem is that the joint tolerances are definitely not uniform across the board. The other end of the spectrum for me was my Mod 7, which was a bummer, because that's the one I actually kind of like the most. That one had far tighter joints, and actually had a split on the thigh that I had to glue back together. That's just the nature of these things with their heavy use of ball joints is... When you get a really good set of tolerances, these things are amazing, and I love them. And then when you get a bad set of tolerances, it's kind of a bummer. On the bright side, it also is all ball joints, so it's modifiable. If it's too tight, you can just hell of work the joint until it's looser. And if it's loose, like what happened to my older Armstrong I had, I just put some floor polish in his shoulder, and then it tightened itself back up again because it's a ball joint. So overall, though, like the large Martins were really cool, but I think that for someone who really wants the utmost bang for their buck, it is great that the Armstrongs right now can be gotten in four very decent color schemes for like $50. And I was really surprised how much I liked some of those color schemes, like Floyd with his lack of anything interesting in the promo pics. When I popped him open, I didn't realize that he had this really well done chipped yellow paint app look done on one of his arms, and it brings out a lot of character in that, you know, somewhat featureless robot. So I'm very pleased with those Armstrongs, and it helps that...
Yeah,
I've
seen a few times now where, like, those first pictures, when they're announced, paint apps will change for the better when they actually come out. Like, if you look up the Aust Republic, if you just see a listing on a website where they're using the official picture for it, like at Vinyl Purgatory or Big Bad Toy Store or whatever, it looks super bland.
Yeah.
But the final version had that giant emblem on its chest. That makes it way more interesting.
Yeah, when I opened up the box, because I felt how heavy it was, and I was like, oh, this must be the Aust Republic that nobody buys. I opened it up, and then also when I saw that on the back of his head, he has the name, like, Tubby Johnson written on the back of his head or something, I was like, okay, this thing's actually pretty cool, because there is character to the paint apps. And definitely with these Armstrongs, like, try to see them in person if you can, but if you're going to blind buy one, like, by far the most striking color schemes I saw were Jerry and Floyd. which surprised me because they were the two that I was thinking about the least. Not to say Mod 7 and Monet don't have things going for them, but Jerry uses this really good blue, and the bloody arm has this total, like, just vampire feel to it, which is what he's going for. And Floyd is just deceptively striking with the yellow. Speaking as someone who, like, I don't like the color yellow, and I kind of like the way it's used on him in this minimal way. So, I am really pleased with those Armstrongs. Seth, do you have all four of them on the way?
I hope so.
Me too.
That's what I ordered.
I am hoping you luck out. I'm hoping you luck out on the joint tolerances, because I think they were very well done. None of them feel like a bum release to me. Like with the large Martins, whenever I look at them, there's always at least one. Like often it's somewhere between the sand one and the Mr. Frosty, where I'm kind of like, I don't even know if I care that much about this. And then, like, with these four Armstrongs, I'm kind of like, yeah, you know, there's something in each of these that strikes me. Definitely, I see why people wouldn't care about most of them if their taste didn't match up. But
The site I ordered it from, it's not this person's primary source of income. It's a pretty small-time store.
Hmm.
And I know they've been really busy organizing a custom show. Like, he's getting a venue in San Francisco. There's a lot of people bringing custom figures for display. So I know he's been really busy with that stuff, but I sent a message yesterday and I haven't heard anything back yet. Just like, hey, buddy, still out there?
Yeah, get a hold of him.
I mean, I'm sure it will work out, but I mean, he might not even have them yet, so I don't know.
Yeah. Their boxes are smaller than the Martins, at least. The shipping's not too bad. But, the only other thing I got off topic is I upgraded my mobile audio setup. I got a thing that's called the Zoom H4N. I got this thing on the recommendation, the non-simultaneous and fully autonomous recommendations of two gentlemen that I've come to know through the media I do, be it this podcast or the videos that I do on YouTube, Frank Knight and Q-Dog. Oblivious to each other's intentions, had both at some point recommended to me the Zoom H4N. So I decided to pick one up. What it is it's from 2009, but is still heavily used today. So it's kind of a proven piece of hardware. It's a large recording device. It has a pair of linked stereo mics at the top, so you can record some very nice quality stereo sound with the device itself, and you can swivel the mics to have either a 90 degree or a 120 degree cone of major influence off the front of the Zoom. It is also a self-powered phantom powering soundboard. It has two jacks on the bottom that can take nearly anything, including XLR, and it can provide phantom power at two different voltages. It has its own built-in EQ settings if you choose to use them. It can function as a USB soundboard if you just need to have a microphone running into your computer. It is also able to be a metronome and a guitar tuner, and runs for about 6 hours off of two AA batteries. So it also has a screw mount spot on the back, so you can give it a mic handle, so you can use it as a microphone, or you can attach it to the top of a DSLR camera to make it basically be a combined boom mic. And the best thing is it runs on AA's for a decent amount of time. So I decided that I wanted to pick it up because the one thing that I was kind of getting tired of at conventions was lugging around my little soundboard and all the cables associated with it and trying to get all that set up. And because it's a soundboard, I'd have to find a stable platform for it. I couldn't just pull it out and record with it. This thing I am hopefully at future shows I go to, this is just one thing I can use it for. Future shows I go to, I'll be able to actually do proper mobile audio. And then linking into my own filmic interests, I can use this thing to actually record proper audio when I film stuff, not just relying on the microphone that's attached to the top of my camera, which then, tying back to conventions, means hopefully I can actually interview people on convention floors and get decent audio, especially since this thing is a microphone that I can then plug another condenser mic into the bottom of and have two or three mic interviews going on with decent quality and on screen if I choose. So the whole thing, just the sheer number of functions it did, made me decide, like, I think that I am at a stage right now where I would really like to upgrade my sound equipment and go in on this. I feel like I can make use of it. So that's the the big toy I bought this week. Hopefully, next convention we're all at, I can totally use it with your guys' stuff, and we can make podcasts not have as much setup time or something. I don't know. But I'm really happy about it. Gog, take us out with your off-topic stuff.
Yeah. I only got two off-topic things. They're both Halo figures. They're both Elites.
Oh!
I'm not a big Halo fan, but I've always been fascinated by the Elite design, and I think some of the figures look really cool. I saw on the back of the box art, or the card art of one of the new blue package Master Chief figures, that they were releasing an Arbiter figure, and I've always really liked the Arbiter. Halo 2 is the only Halo game I've actually played, and I thought the Arbiter was pretty cool, so... the last figure they made of him, I missed it, so I thought it was cool they were making a new one. Unfortunately, it's not a new one. It looks to be a re-release of the old one, from what I understand. So it's totally not in scale with the Elites that are out now, which was really a bummer. But it's still cool. I got an Arbiter. I wish it was the newer style of Reach Elites. I got a Reach Elite General from, I think, the fourth wave of the Reach figures. He's got this nice gold ornamental armor. He has a this cool removable helmet. It's a beautiful looking figure. I passed on it a couple times, mostly because I couldn't justify it at the time for something that wasn't high on my priority list at the time. But saw him for a third time, and he's getting harder and harder to find because he's always the first to disappear from that wave and never show up again. So I grabbed him, and I'm super glad that I did. So it's a... absolutely beautiful figure. The only problem is he has a gun, which I've been informed is known as a fuel rod gun or something. The way that the Elite's hands are molded, it is super freaking difficult to get him to hold his gun properly. So, but apparently it can be done if you take a hairdryer, something along those lines, to heat the plastic up, and it makes the fingers more pliable, and you can actually bend them and push them into the proper holes and put the thumb around the thumb hole and stuff. But so I'll get him to hold it when I have the time and effort to completely heat his hand up and then make it more malleable and put it into the right places. But outside of
has been a lot of Halo figures have a hard time holding them.
And I read that, so and whatever, I'm fine with that, and as long as it's possible, because I'm sure once I finally get the gun into the hand and those fingers harden back up, I really doubt he's going to drop his gun, and I'll be fine with that once I get into the right spot. But even if he didn't hold it, I'd be like, whatever. I just give him the sword, the energy sword weapon from another Elite that I had, from whatever was that last Elite they released. The one in the black armor is like some Spec Ops Elite or something. But, yeah, I like Elites. I think they're really cool design. I'm not huge into Halo fiction.
When are you buying your Xbox?
Ask Seth. We've had this conversation many times. Even up till yesterday.
I saw the conversation on Twitter, and I wanted to reference it because that's what I do.
Yeah. Well, it's not just a conversation. It's an ongoing saga.
It's a saga.
It's been going on for months. Yeah. So whatever. We'll see. He may break me eventually. It ain't gonna be today. but no, Elites are cool. I've always dug them. They're not even bad guys. They're just dudes, you know. They're doing their thing, and you know, in the end, they made the right decision. I could chill out, totally have a beer with an Elite. They're good dudes. But yeah, if you're bored, don't have anything to buy, pick up that Elite General. It's awesome. Whatever, it's cool. I'm glad I got it. End of show.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you all for listening to WTF at TFW. I want to just throw in a little plug here at the end for a second for a couple of little projects related to the show that you may be interested in checking out. Number one, Sound Waves. Just in case you somehow missed the fact that I had it added to the front page post for 164, Seth and Gog have done their own little thing of answering some of the somewhat stranger voicemail entries on the WTF Hotline voicemail inbox. And it's called Sound Waves. There's an episode out of it. You should listen to it because it's quite fun. I am not going to lie or shill. I'm just going to say that I listened through it once to make sure everything sounded all right, and I laughed many times and at one point actually clapped.
Yeah, which part did you clap at? I'm curious.
It was some part where you were just viciously abusing somebody that we both know, and I can't remember who it was because you did it more than once, and you did it in a way that made me start laughing really hard, and I can't remember what it was now. I think it might have been the BlackBerry. I can't remember now.
Oh, yeah, that was Biatus.
The BlackBerry one made me laugh quite a bit. Just this rolling gerbil ball of growing, like, yeah, you got a BlackBerry. And I was like, all right, this is artistic. I like this. Also, I like it because I didn't have to edit it. I just had to put it into a project file and export it. I, like, messed with the EQ very slightly. And then if you listen to the very end, I added a small 2-second Easter egg.
I heard.
Yeah.
Because you don't...
I was wondering if you heard
it.
Yeah,
I had to get in on the action.
I was sitting there, I was like, man, I'm not in on this action yet. What can I do so that I can get them to go, like, why are you in on the action? And I was like, I'm going to add that
the
little
ego
thing.
Ego King has to get his 2 bits.
That's right. Also, now this extends to my own projects, but it's related to BotCon. There were 2 podcasts I recorded for my own little shindig called Vaudio Sonic at BotCon, and by the time you hear this, they should both be listenable somehow. Hit up my evangelist.ca page and look for them. Number one is Toyetic Videodrome, where I sat down with Piaw and talked about the origins of back when animated stolen toys were showing up on eBay, how a bunch of us all got into it. We also totally dropped some yang on Aaron because Aaron totally bought a really expensive deluxe Prowl way back then. RoboVision XLR should be out by the time this is out, and that's one where I had massive amounts of help from Gog and Quinjester. We had, thanks to Darth Prime, we had George K, Josh L, and Will F, three gentlemen who happened to work in animation, who were also at BotCon on Saturday, BotCon 2011. Had a really fun chat with them, despite the mic quality not turning out all that well. I did some cleanup on it. And I had a lot of help from Gog and Quinjester because I was deathly sick while we were recording that, and at one point had to flee to clear my nasal passages, throwing a microphone at Gog and saying, "Here, you take over for a sec." And it happens quite smoothly.
I'm only going off of memory, but I specifically remember saying, "Hey, Gog, talk about Gunbuster," and you running out of the room. Did that stay in?
Something like that, yeah. The only outright cuts I made were those animator guys, like, they were bumping that mic like nobody's business. I tried to cut out a lot of that. And the reason why I say the quality wasn't all that great is because they weren't speaking directly into the mic half the time. So it's a little bit up and down. The only stuff I cut out were long pauses and those thudder bumps. I tried to leave in everything else. Oh, I did cut out a lot of me sniffling because it irritated me while I was listening to it. Then I realized if my own sniffling irritates me, it probably will irritate a listener even more. So I tried to cut out as much of that as I could. But please check that out because those are 2 fruits of our BotCon labor. They are 2 things that were almost in our BotCon podcast lineup, and then I thought were so specialized might just fit in better as Vaudio Sonic stuff. But they are still from BotCon. You might want to check them out. Plugging over. How do people leave voicemail messages in the voicemail inbox? Because I know that I'm not all that good at dropping the voicemail number. I get a little.
You know how you get good?
How do I get good?
Practice.
Oh,
yeah.
Can I try it?
Yeah.
What if I don't do it right?
Then you try again.
You suck.
Oh, okay. Our voicemail inbox number is area code 318-775-9830. Area code 318-775-9830. Area code 318-775-9830.
Wow, you did it.
Area code 3... What?
Kinda.
Huh?
You did it.
But I didn't do it another time yet.
No, you did it 3 times.
Yeah, you're supposed to do it 4, right? Area code 318-775-9830.
3's good. Oh. 3's good.
3 is industry standards.
I'm not standard. I'm a renegade.
That's why you're practicing.
I've been awake too long today. Thank you for your support. Anyway, we're going to be back again sometime with some stuff. Prime Time will be returning very soon because we can finally watch it in HD again. Which I felt was important. Look forward to that, and we'll talk to you later. This has been WTF at TFW. Soaring through the black hole in a Star Fox R-Wing, going into the meteor with the face, and then going to the warp zone! Woo!
Bleeding saber. Bleep, 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 bleep.
It means, but you got some badass perpetrators that are here to stay.